It is, especially with Thorn in the Side Thursday, or even the front porch Friday on the front porch, which this is sort of because I won't be here tomorrow, so I got my boots up on the front porch rail already, sunshine. This is the horn, for those of you who have never heard it before. It's conversation radio, such as you have never heard before. Radio like no other, except no substitute. With half my brain tied behind my back and my throat full of OxyContin. Oh, wait, wrong. No. Wrong political spectrum, sorry. Let's dial it back in a little bit, Bob. Now, you know I'm going to be gone tomorrow, and things are coming together. I'd like to be there earlier than Sunday night, but that's the best I can do. Because there's going to be a whole lot going on, and if there are any of you planning to show up, it's going to be something incredibly special. The Georgetown Conference Center will be the locus of the event, and it's going to be I just saw some of the performance listings. Saturday night will kick off at 7:30. You know, Bo Webb mentioned when we talked on Monday that there would be fun and entertainment as well, and it kicks up in the evening. Saturday night there will be a sermon and singing by the Reverend Billy at 7:30, followed by Michael and Carrie Klein. Larry Gibson's going to be there, Crystal Good. It goes on. Silas House will be there. Wow, Silas House. Sunday morning, there will be a special breakfast with Ben Solee, who is simply amazing, with a cello. I didn't know cellos could do what Ben Solee makes a cello do. Sunday night, it'll be wonderful as well. All kinds of folks. There's a theater piece coming Sunday as well. And then Monday is the big day. And even if you can't be there, you can be there. We've still got to test some of the more extreme tech. But I have no reason not to believe. Does that make sense? Okay. That it's all going to work. And we're pretty old hand at this streaming business, so I'm darn certain that's going to work. And you can check in about 10 a.m. Eastern time. That would be 7 a.m. Pacific. For the proceedings to get underway. It's going to be big. Really, really big. Now, of course, what Appalachia Rising is about, and you can go and learn a lot more at AppalachiaRising.org, Appalachia Rising, just like it, Appalachia, Rising, R-I-S-I-N-G, AppalachiaRising.org. You can learn a lot more. But more than anything else, this is a human rights rally. And frankly, and I'm not trying to piss anybody off, you know, people have limited resources. I would far rather be at this rally than the one coming up the following weekend. I forget what they're calling that. Because this one really is grassroots. When you heard Bo Webb talking Monday night, you heard one of the primary organizers. There's nobody organizing this who has a massive salary. And yet it has been organized with amazing precision. And yet, my congressman, and this is my conundrum, and it's not a conundrum of my creation. This is a conundrum that my congressman has put me in. And it's crazy making. My buddy J.W. Randolph posted over at Appalachian Voices, appvoices.org today. Ray Hall, protecting Appalachians is harming national security. Really? No, not kidding. Now this is a Democrat of nearly 20 terms in the House of Representatives. This is an important seat. There are no unimportant seats in the House this year. I am not some wet behind the ears newbie to the political process. But Nick Rahal has put me in a terrible conundrum. What am I going to do? We need his seat to be in Democratic hands because, you know, for every bit of complaining that any of you, myself included, any of us have done about the Congress of the past 2 years, you think this was bad? Turn it over to the Repiglickens. Just do it. Just you do it. If you didn't like this, you're going to love a Repiglickin Congress taking power in January of 2011. You're going to love it. So what do I do? Because Nick Rahal has said that I am a threat to national security. The guy that wants me to vote for him says I am a threat to national...
Just give us the money. We'll take care of it.
Well, in our case, in our state, Pat Toomey is getting some of that corporate money, absolutely, but... If you remember, there was just oceans of money that came in here because originally they thought that his opponent would be the long-term senator from Pennsylvania, Mr. Spector.
They weren't expecting the guy from New Jersey or somewhere else. They were expecting a senator from Pennsylvania, right?
Well, you know what I'm saying, and he got upset. Many people think that when Sustak beat Spector, it was an upset. That may or may not be, but the point is, he had oceans of money, plus now you have the corporate money coming in, they think they have a real shot. I think that's part of the reason that Sustak's behind in this state, and Toomey's ahead. He's just way out ahead of him, much longer with commercials, but I think as we get closer to the election, I think that those numbers are going to change.
I spend a little time online, and you know, go to any website right now, and all the Google ads are all Pat Toomey. Everywhere you look online where they take ads, it is Pat Toomey spending that money. And it's got to be a lot of money. I would love to know how much money he is spending on Google ads and on banner ads, because every page you go to, there he is. There is his face constantly in your view. And what's important about that is the money that he's getting that gives him the ability to be constantly in your ear, constantly in your eyesight, constantly right there. And like we talked about last night, you know, people absorb things without thinking. There's a bunch of subliminal messaging going on here. And I'm telling you, you gotta pay attention to this stuff. Because they are inundating us with just this subtle reassurance. But I'm telling you, the underlying part of this, Toomey's bottom line platform is destroying Social Security. They want to privatize it. Why? Because Wall Street wants the money. It's not that he doesn't like seniors. It's not that he doesn't like Social Security. It's about Wall Street. It's about taking that money and making the commission off the sale. It's about making the commission off the trade. It's about Wall Street. That's all it is.
But you don't hear his position in Social Security. If you look at his commercials, Rick, it's a pretty soft sell. And if I were him, I'd do the same thing. Vanilla, you see him with his wife. You see him with his family. He portrays himself as a reformer. And the commercials against Sustak, they try to tie him in with Pelosi.
And a little bit later on in the program, we're going to talk about what exactly does it mean to be in the middle class? Is the American dream dying? Is it dead, as some people have said? I think this is an interesting conversation. We're going to take your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Again, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Tons of emails this week, and I appreciate all that, and I appreciate the contact. By all means, tell your friends that we're here. This is how we're going to fight back. This is how we're going to take our government back. And look, it's not just the Republicans that anger me. It's the Democrats that anger me, too. We need to make sure that we have a government that works for the little guy. Those of us who actually have to worry about if we're going to have a pension, worry about if we're going to have health care, worry about if we're going to be able to feed our kids tomorrow. I mean, that's really what it's about. And as I've said before, at the end of all of this political bickering, at the end of the back and forth and the fighting and all of that, is the common thread that I think we all share, which is we want to feed our kids, we want to have a decent place for them to live and a decent school for them to attend in safe neighborhoods. We want to have good jobs that pay reasonable wages with decent benefits and health care and pensions and all of that. And we want to retire secure. We don't want to have to worry that when we get older, we're going to have to eat cat food. I think we all can agree on that. The difference is how do we get to that point? And demonizing and doing some of the things that I've seen the Tea Party do, to me, is disgraceful. You know, I didn't like George W. Bush at all. Never once did I ever say, well, you know, he's not a real American. I did say he wasn't a real Texan, because he wasn't. He was from Connecticut. But that's not like saying, well, he's not an American.
You could say he wasn't a cowboy either. Although he was. He was in a sense, but not in his ranch.
Well, you mean the ranch with no animals?
The ranch with no... And no horses.
Well, I mean, look, hey, you know, and I think I've said it once before. You know, if I were Laura, I wouldn't let him have animals either, because for some reason he thought you could milk a horse. So whatever he was doing during his drunken teen years, I don't think we need to know. And we don't need a commission to find out either, which is what's going to happen if the Republicans take over in November. We're going to see investigations into everything, and they've already told you that. They're going to investigate every single thing. And they're really not looking for anything. They're looking for everything for the purpose of tying things up, for the purpose of gridlock, obstruction, which is the Republican way when they don't get their way. And like my 4-year-old or my 2-year-old. And speaking of my 2-year-old, happy birthday today to my daughter, Allie. She would be born here in about 20 minutes, 2 years ago today. So happy birthday, sweetheart. Pleasant dreams. But, you know, look, again, I think we can all agree. There are some things that we can all agree on, that there are places that we want to go as a nation. It's just how we're going to get there.
I agree, Rick.
Anyway, we're going to talk with Richard Eskow, his piece, GOP's Pledge to Rob the Middle Class, No Jobs, No Health Care, No Security. You can find that at our website at therickSmithShow.com. Remember, you can email me there, rick@therickSmithShow.com. And for those of you in the chat room, Brett is in the chat room, so say hello to Brett. And by all means, a little feedback would be great. And you can give us a call right here, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break right here. We're right back with Richard Eskow from the Campaign for America's Future. Stick around.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. An estimated 1.5 to 2 million people Thursday protested a plan to raise the minimum retirement age in France from 60 to 62. The retirement benefits cut would also raise the age for full retirement benefits, regardless of number of years worked, from 65 to 67. Widespread protest strikes had a huge impact on transportation and other public services. French workers and their unions see these changes as attacks on the social support system built by workers and their unions over many years. Workers Independent News executive producer Frank Emspach was at the demonstration in the streets of Paris.
There's more private sector workers who have gone on strike today, and not only in Paris, but throughout France. In every major city, there is some kind of huge demonstration. I'm in Paris, and you can hear in the background, I think, some of the noise and some of the marchers. The line extends from the Place de Bastille, which is on one side of Paris, all the way without break to the other side at another major square. It's probably about a mile and a half. It's actually shoulder to shoulder, thousands and thousands of people, all political persuasions, down this vast avenue. Most of the people, at least half, are young people. And they have said to us in French, it's hard for me to translate on this phone, but they said to me in French, if they're fighting for the future, they're not going to tolerate this kind of attack on their parents who've worked or themselves. This is the beginning of what appears to be a nationwide political mobilization. People have had it. They've demanded a referendum because Sarkozy, the premier, ran on the basis that he would not do this to the pensions. So they are now directly attacking the government's legitimacy.
The United Auto Workers Farm Labor Organizing Committee, Rainbow Push, and some clergy are announcing today that they're withdrawing hundreds of millions of dollars from Chase Bank. It's a protest against J.P. Morgan Chase's refusal to declare a two-year moratorium on home foreclosures in Michigan and the bank's continuing ties with R.J. Reynolds Corporation. UAW President Bob King says Chase could make a huge difference to help unemployed homeowners in Michigan and unpaid farm workers in the Carolinas if the banks would suspend foreclosures and pressure R.J. Reynolds to do the right thing by farm workers. The UAW and community leaders in Michigan also want Michigan Democratic Congressman John Conyers to hold hearings on the failure of Chase and other banks to effectively implement federal programs to help keep people in their homes. United Steelworkers Vice President Gary Beavers says the oil industry's run-to-failure mentality concerning equipment is getting worse every day. Beavers says it's motivated by money, and the union says it compromises safety, and the industry needs to return to more frequent turnovers, times when the refineries are shut down for maintenance. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachmann, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Dick Armey's Freedom Works, the right-wing Tea Party group, you know, the people who brought you this whole Tea Twizzler thing, they have now come out and endorsed Joe Miller, the guy from Alaska. And what's also interesting is you got Jim DeMint, senator from South Carolina, lashing out at Lisa Murkowski for how dare you consider a write-in bid against our Tea Twizzler guy. I'm really liking this because Mike Castle is now saying, you know what, maybe I may run a write-in because we can't have someone crazy like O'Donnell representing the state of Delaware. So I'm interested to see how this stuff's going to go. But I don't know. We talked about it pretty much all night last night. The grand pledge, the pledge to help the really wealthy. And we knew that's what it was going to be, the pledge of no real new ideas, no vision, nothing. But it was a good PR stunt, and it got a little publicity. I've asked Richard Escrow to come on and give us a little talk about the grand pledge. Richard, welcome to the program. Did I put him on, didn't I? Richard, are you there? Richard, are you there? I think we lost Richard. Anyway, we had the grand Tea Twizzler thing. We'll just get him back on the line here in a minute. But what I wanted to, you know, with this whole Tea Twizzler thing, this whole pledge, the grand pledge, all it's really been is a call for, you know, more tax cuts for the very, very wealthy. More luck for the sperm lottery winners. You know, the more that they can stuff into their pocket, the better off it's going to be. And again, my favorite part of this whole thing has been the U-cut idea, which is just absolutely amazing to me. Anyway, we got Richard Escrow on the line. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's good to be here, finally.
thank you for the just a little technical problem. I read your piece, GOP's pledge to rob the middle class, no jobs, no health care, no security. And again, as I said all day yesterday, this is nothing new here. There's no here.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, I think what you've got here is They got tired of being labeled the party of no, so they decided to be very specific about what they're saying no to. And what they're saying no to is everything that would really make things better for the middle class in this country that people are trying to do. No regulation, meaning, welcome to the next BP disaster. No regulation of the financial industry, which means welcome to your next crash. Tax cuts for the wealthy that are going to make the deficit terrible, cutting all the programs that are trying to help people that have been hurt in this economy, on and on and on. The only thing they say yes to, it seems, is this Star Wars missile defense program that they can't get to work right. And that's it, and that we don't need. But other than that, it's no, no, no.
I mean, what's amazing to me is how completely out of touch this plan was. Because, the beginning of it, because I read the 48-page, the big pledge, and a lot of flowery language, a lot of very flowery, happy, jingoistic, nationalistic, chest-thumping, proud kind of language, but nothing of any real substance whatsoever.
Well, you know what I had to chuckle at was I wrote that this had to be written by a lobbyist, because there's one point in all that patriotic language where they say, we hold this truth to be evident or something, that America needs a new agenda. And I said, hey, agenda is kind of like a business word. It's not like the constitutional framers didn't use the word agenda. I'm thinking this was written by lobbyists, because it's got a lot of giveaways to lobbyists. And they figured out today that it was written by a lobbyist, the guy who used to be a lobbyist who works for Boehner. And now they found it in the programming of the document that he was the author. So,
that's
beautiful. It's just written, tries to sound patriotic, but it's written by a lobbyist.
You know what I love about the whole right-wing movement there, and not just them, but a lot of the politicians, how lazy they have become, that they're not even going to write their own jingoistic document. Come on, at least fess up and do it yourself, I guess.
Well, you got to spend so many hours a day in the tanning bed and whatnot that, it gets a little tough. But
speaking of tan man.
But it's all in there. I'll tell you, it's all in there. If you're making $1 billion a year running a hedge fund, this has got everything you want.
Speaking of the tan man, he's just down the street from us here tonight. He's here in Harrisburg at the Republican GOP fundraiser for Pat Toomey, the other Wall Street candidate.
Oh, yeah. No, we got quite a few of them out there right now. You probably noticed if you read my piece, it just cracked me up too. If you people who work for a living, when you take a look at the pictures of this event they had yesterday, and they're all wearing these brand new, freshly pressed shirts and going to a hardware store and trying to look like they're just regular folks. That didn't work for me.
With their expensive shoes that they wouldn't want to get anything on.
That's right.
Amazing. Well, let's take a look at some of this, because they talk about jobs. We need to get these tax killing job cuts out of the bill. I'm not seeing that. Where are the jobs going to be created? All I'm seeing is more of the same. Let's give the very wealthy a whole bunch of money and hope that something falls out of their pocket, or it trickles down. Where's that new?
Well, let's face it. I've always said, don't trickle down on my head and tell me it's raining. This job business, they say, stop job killing tax hikes. Well, you know what? This money that's being that people are getting from these tax breaks, they're not creating jobs. They have those breaks for the wealthy today, and an awful lot of people are out of work. So clearly, the tax cuts didn't produce the jobs. They produce a deficit. They prevent the government from helping the people that are in trouble as a result of, what they've done. But job-killing tax hikes, there's no evidence of any kind that keeping these tax cuts will produce jobs when it hasn't produced them for the last 8 years.
Well, and then that's the point. If tax cuts were the panacea, the Bush years would have been full employment. The Bush years would have been the hottest economy since Bill Clinton.
Oh, absolutely. Instead, look, you want to run the government into the ground with a huge deficit like they'd like to do again, because you're giving all the money to the wealthy and taking it out of the middle class. Yeah, I could show a lot of well-to-do people a pretty good time for a few years, but they've had a good time, and it's time now to step up and do what needs to be done. You know, these guys don't want money. The other thing you see is all of these guys who are complaining about stimulus funding, you turn on the news any night of the week and you're going to see one of them at some ribbon-cutting event or some factory that's opening where people are getting 300 jobs or what have you because of stimulus funding. They're out there taking credit for it at the same time that they're trying to kill those jobs.
Yeah, how two-faced can you be?
Oh, absolutely. And
shameless.
You know, the other thing they want to do is they say they want to allow small businesses to take a 20% tax cut, but their definition of small businesses includes the Bechtel Corporation, it includes PricewaterhouseCoopers, it includes the political consultant that probably wrote this document. If he runs his own shop, making $2 million a year, he's a small business. So it's all about giveaway, giveaway, giveaway. And, I mean, that's what giveaway at the top. And the point is the rest of us are going to be left holding the bag just like we were last time.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Richard Eskow from the Campaign for America's Future, OurFuture.org. You know, the big centerpiece of this, the grand pledge, is they're going to destroy the health care, repeal and rescind and replace and what other slogan they came up with. What is their health care plan? The way I'm reading it, it's basically go back to pay or die.
No, it's worse, actually. You know, if they were just going back to the way it was under the pay or die plan, that'd be bad enough. But that's not enough for them. What they want to do now is this old gimmick where they say, oh, let people buy health plans, health insurance across state lines. And you know what that's all about is making sure that there'll be at least one out of the 50 states that will let health insurance companies hose their customers 10 times worse than they were doing before, yeah. And then they'll all move there. It's exactly what happened with the credit card companies.
And
you know, they don't let the states protect their own citizens from greedy credit card dealers, so they all moved to South Dakota where they could buy politicians cheap because it's a small state, and that's what they want to do to health care. So listen, if you like the way your credit card company's been treating you, this is the plan for you.
Sounds like a great one. You know what my favorite part of the whole pledge was, though? It was my favorite part was Suggestion Box Friday. That's what I'm calling it. It's kind of like where the dumb kid has, oh, I have a good idea, and he puts his suggestion in the box, and then we all have a vote on it. They call it U-Cut. It's their U-Cut plan. So they're saying every week they're going to come up with ideas. Everybody's going to put their suggestion in the box, and they're going to vote on it. And I think they can come up with some pretty good awards, like, you know, most devastating cut, most painful cut, most heartless, you know what, some really good,
right.
Good names.
I'm going to guess you get, like, double points if you hurt old ladies with your cut, or kids, you know, they count double. Yeah, we could really make this into something kind of fun for everybody.
Sure, and the prizes could be like golf trips to Ireland or maybe campaign contributions handed out on the floor. You know, some of that good stuff. You know, the stuff like Boehner, the guy down the street, does.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. They're used to that stuff. And, you know, repeal and replace is funny because they're big on repeal and not so big on replace.
And
so,
my other favorite part of it is the whole sperm lottery thing. We got to help the sperm lottery winners because, boy, they just absolutely need the money.
Oh, you're talking about what I call the Paris Hilton handout? You mean the make sure we don't tax rich kids?
Yeah, the sperm lottery winners.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, God forbid that somebody should be taxed on less than their first $3 million or whatever it is of inherited income because, you know, that would make them like people who actually work for a living. Right?
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a dime here. And maybe you'll go with me, maybe you won't. Paris has had some problems, especially recently with a little powder substance problem. Maybe if we had an estate tax that didn't give her so much disposable income to, oh, I don't know, spend on cocaine, maybe she wouldn't find herself in trouble. And, you know, maybe she wouldn't have to make those green grainy films.
Well, I got to tell you, just as an aside, I met a guy once. We were talking. He's a nice enough guy. It turns out he was a rich kid, and he said he was in a support group for trust fund babies. And I couldn't help but I started laughing. And he said, hey, I know, but we've got our problems. And now we learn that that's true. They do have their problems.
It is true.
People laugh. Yeah, I think you're right. Work for a living. That ought to help you out.
Well, no, I mean, do something. I mean, you know, look, I see a lot of these sperm lottery winners, and they don't really do much. Our Forbes 400 is full of them.
Oh, yeah. No, it's really, you know, it's kind of sad to watch. But what they do is they write checks to politicians in campaign contributions. And believe me, that's all they've got to know how to do is sign their name on a check to a politician so that they don't get taxed. And, you know, then they pay some consultant a lot of money to come up with a crazy argument like we're being taxed on that money twice. Well, that's like saying that my boss is taxed on his money twice, once when he collects his revenue and then when he pays my check. No, that's not how it works. Everybody, when they get the money, they pay.
Right.
It's not a death tax. The dead guy isn't paying any taxes. The person getting free money is paying taxes.
Exactly. And that's what most people don't seem to get. But what it is that the right has done a masterful job. And you've got to give Frank Luntz the credit of genius that he deserves. The term death tax hits you on every visceral level possible. Because you've got guys who go, I got $500 in the bank. When I die, I want to leave it to my grandson. I don't want that taxed. And you got people honestly believing that $500 is going to be taxed.
Yeah, I actually got an email once from Whoopi Goldberg because I'd written something. She said something on The View that I read about where she said that kind of death tax thing. I said, come on, Whoopi, not you too. You're okay. And she sent me a note and said, but, you know, I couldn't talk her out of it. You know, I earned my money and the hard way. I came up from nothing. And why can't I give this money to my kids without being taxed? And I said, you're not being taxed. Your kids are being taxed. So, yeah, they've done a great job. The messaging is, and they're doing an equally great job convincing people that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme or that it's bankrupt. Doesn't matter how many reports you see saying that it's essentially sound it's definitely sound for 20 years. We can make it 100% sound for 75 years. Doesn't matter. It's a crisis. It's a Ponzi scheme. They're very good at this stuff. You got to give them that.
I absolutely do. Let's get back to the grand pledge for a second, because I wanted to talk about this a little bit more. I think they really made a huge error here, because not only is it a bad pledge, it's amateurish and just seems petty and frivolous and really of no substance, where everybody in the media is going, this is it?
Well, you know, that's interesting, too, because you say that, because I went back and I looked at the contract with America, and which was obviously supposed to copy, and I got to tell you, next to this thing that they did yesterday, the contract with America looks like the Magna Carta. You know what I mean? The contract with America, at least it's specific. It says we're for these 8 things. We're going to pass these 10 laws. You're absolutely right. This is just people are looking at this and saying, you know, like the old song says, is that all there is? But see, that's the point. They want to be vague. They have to be vague because if they're any more specific, then people are going to. Hey, David Frum, who was George Bush's speechwriter, right, conservative, right-winger, put it perfectly. He said, why would they blow such good momentum going into the elections by being specific about policies that people hate?
Exactly.
Hey, he's telling the truth.
Yep.
And, you know, these guys aren't.
Because, well, what I've asked, and I've asked several people, you know, and we're trying to get Tom Corbett to identify just one thing that he would cut. We keep hearing this, well, we need to cut government spending. We need to cut spending. Government's too bloated. We need to cut spending. And just tell me one thing you want to cut. Just find one thing, and we'll have the discussion on that one thing you want to cut. There's nothing.
Well, you know, that's like this thing where they say in this document they want to roll back non-discretionary spending to 208 levels before TARP. Well, you know, that's like saying, you know, I want to roll back my insurance payments till before I rammed your car. You know, I mean, no, you got to fix the car and pay the cost for fixing the car. You know, they're not, but they won't even be specific about that. What are you going to cut unemployment? Are you going to cut what exactly do you think you're going to cut? So they don't want to say because somebody else said it, and I think they put it exactly right. They're very, very specific about how they'll run off the deficit and very vague about how they'll save money. They'll add $1 trillion to the deficit by giving it to rich people over the next 10 years. $1 trillion. That's the actual number. They're very specific about that, but they're very vague about how they're going to save any money along the way, because they know they're going to hurt people who don't deserve to be hurt because of this reckless way they've handled the economy.
Well, I got to be honest. I don't think they're serious about cutting anything. I think it's all political. It's all political rhetoric. Once they get into power, they get the power of the purse string. They're going to be just as irresponsible and drunken teenage, Bushite as they were during his years.
Well, I think that's right. But hey, they're going to require that every bill have a citation of constitutional authority. How's that for fixing America?
I said that we could. There's a cut that they could probably get away with. We could just cut out the whole judicial branch and just have Congress declare it constitutional.
Oh, no. They've spent too many years stacking the judicial branch. They don't want to cut it now.
Excellent.
They've got
point.
A lot of investment in the judicial
branch. Excellent point. The piece is GOP's pledge to rob the middle class. No jobs, no health care. No Security, written by Richard Eskow. You can see that over at the Campaign for America's website, ourfuture.org. There should be a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Richard, great talking to you. Great piece, and I appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks a lot, Rick. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right here. We're right back with your calls. Stick around.
Me. I ain't never been on welfare, and that's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
John Boehner is known for his ties and his tan. You've probably never heard of this Ohio Republican who's been the minority leader for 4 years, but he has big plans to be the next Speaker of the U.S. House. Who is he? For clues, look no further than those ties and that tan. The tan is odd, both because it has an eerie orange hue to it and because it never goes away. Even in the dead of winter, this GOP leader from sun-starved Ohio has such a perpetual glow that he's been nicknamed Suntan Johnny. How does he get the glow? By routinely flying on corporate jets to play golf with corporate lobbyists on various corporate tabs at such sun-drenched resorts as the Ritz-Carlton in Naples, Florida. Which brings us to his ties, by which I don't mean the flashy silk neckwear he favors. Rather, I mean Boehner's flagrant ties to a clique of powerful influence peddlers. These ties go way back. In 1996, he was caught passing checks from tobacco lobbyists to fellow Republicans on the House floor. His inner circle of special interests is so cozy that it's even been given its own nickname, Boehnerland. Outsiders need not apply, for Boehnerland is an exclusive place inhabited by about 20 lobbyists for such outfits as Citigroup, R.J. Reynolds, Coors, Goldman Sachs, Google, and UPS. They put millions of campaign dollars into his pockets, fly him around, wine and dine him at the finest restaurants, and sustain his political ambitions. In turn, Boehner is their boy. One member of Suntan Johnny's corrupt club candidly told the New York Times that he regularly gets Boehner's help for his clients, ranging from fighting limits on debit card fees to protecting tax breaks for hedge fund operators. This is Jim Hightower saying they want Boehner to become Speaker for one reason. He's fluent in corporate speak.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanic.
technical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Ah, you gotta love the pledge. You gotta love the pledge. Because what it's gonna do is it's gonna, as we said in the last segment, it's going to protect the sperm lottery winners. And we've got another one, another sperm lottery winner. His name is John Race. He is running for he's running for Senate in West Virginia. As you know, Senator Robert Byrd passed away, and now they're, you know, Joe Manchin, the governor, is running against this really wealthy Republican. And he was on a talk show, a conservative talk show there in West Virginia, and he made this statement.
I made my money the old-fashioned way. I inherited it, and I think that's a great thing to do, and I hope more people in this country have that opportunity.
Yeah, he did. He honestly said that.
He actually said that.
Can we play that again?
I made my money the old-fashioned way. I inherited it. And I think that's a great thing to do, and I hope more people in this country have that opportunity.
It's a great thing to do. And I've often said this. I wish I were a sperm lottery winner like him, because, you know, then I could waste a bunch of money, and I could be honest. Because the good thing about him is that he's honest about it. He understands, look, I'm standing on home plate, but I didn't hit the ball. You know, there was a home run hit. It just wasn't by me. I'm just a lucky guy who gets to stand here at home plate. Where most people, you know, you got to give him credit, Jake. You got to give him credit that he's willing to stand up and say, you know what? Yeah, I inherited it.
He's trying to be funny. It's not very funny. Of course, you know where that came from. It was to take off on a commercial years ago.
We earned it. He didn't earn it. He inherited it, which is kind of odd that you would take that approach in West Virginia, one of the poorest states in the country. And it's amazing to me that these two guys are running neck and neck. Amazing stuff. Anyway, the Associated Press had an interesting piece today talking about a poll that just came out. It says if anyone is scorned as much as Democrats these days, it's Republicans, the party that may recapture the House and perhaps the Senate in November's election. Yet Democrats trying to exploit the GOP's unpopularity in hopes of hanging on the control of Congress, face a problem. People who dislike Democrats seem ready to vote in greater numbers than those who dislike Republicans. And, you know, maybe that's true. The Associated Press GFK poll this month, 60% disapproved of the job Democrats are doing in Congress, yet 68% disapprove of how Republicans are performing. While 59% are unhappy at how Democrats are handling the economy, 64% are unhappy with the way the Republicans are working on the country's top issue. And I find it kind of interesting that this poll is saying, look, yeah, we're not happy with the Democrats, but we're even more unhappy with the Republicans.
I think that points out something Joe Biden said yesterday. He said, look, contrary, and you talked about it, Rick, contrary to about all the gloom and doom about giving this election to the Republicans, he said, you know, they've helped us out. They've run in four or five different states, these ultra right wing looney tunes running for Senate, running for Congress. He said, what we need to do is get out there and tell them what the Republicans are about. We have to tell them what you're going to be voting in. He said we can still win this, and I think he is right. I think the early stages of this election, that massive, massive influx of money has had a lot to do with some of the numbers you see. But the Democrats in quite a few of these races still have a good shot, Rick, and I really do believe that.
I think there are shots for a lot of them. Nothing, there's no sweep here in November that can't be fixed. The poll says that President Obama isn't cooperating enough on the economy, yet even more say the Republicans are even more uncooperative. Former President George W. Bush and former quitter governor of Alaska, Governor Sarah Palin, the only two Republicans the poll tested, were both viewed more negatively than was Obama, which is kind of interesting. The majority of people blame Bush for the economy, not Obama. So, you know, again, I think if we get out here and we tell people, look, this didn't just happen overnight. This collapse didn't just happen. This is 30 years in the making. This is policy after policy in the making of the Reagan years and of the Bush years. And we've got to reinforce that.
By the way, did you hear who the president's called on? He's called on Bill Clinton, and he's going to be sending him into the blue, not only the blue states, but the blue-collar states. I know in Pennsylvania he definitely would come across.
Well, he's going to pull in a lot of the moderate, you know, the moderate Democrats and a lot of the sane Republicans. You got to give the party credit. They're using Clinton the right way. He was a moderate to conservative Democrat, and he did pull in a lot of independent and a lot of moderate Republicans. And there are still, I'm hoping, some moderate Republicans who the party has left behind. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right here. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I got a picture in my pocket of a lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat, beat with my business hat. I'm up to 1 a.m., I must tell you that I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, teaching America for the better.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
On June 25, 1938, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law. Viewed as one of the final pieces of legislation of FDR's New Deal and the single most worker-friendly piece of legislation ever written, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was a victory not only for labor unions, but for workers, families, and children across the country. FDR called the new law the most far-reaching, far-sighted program for the benefit of workers ever adopted in this or any other country. This visionary piece of legislation put ceiling over hours and a floor under wages, mandating a 44-hour work week, a 25-cent minimum wage, and time and a half for overtime. The Fair Labor Standards Act was later amended to 40 hours per week and 40 cents per hour. The law also excluded children from working dangerous jobs and set standard conditions for the employment of child workers to avoid continued exploitation of children. The Fair Labor Standards Act has been changed or amended at least 43 different times. These alterations have been used both to expand worker protections, such as raising the minimum wage, prohibiting age discrimination, and requiring equal pay, and to restrict and take away protections such as the Taft-Hartley Act and the 2004 Fair Pay Amendment. Today, we take the 40-hour work week, minimum wages, overtime, and child labor protections for granted. But up until the passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, workers were at the mercy of their employers, and children were dying in industrial accidents. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Well, you know, they thought they were going to have a tea party. They thought they were going to have a nice forum at the Faith Lutheran Junior Senior High School in Summerlin, Nevada. Turns out, not so. The home of the Faith Lutheran Crusaders turned into a place where, yep, the people were brawling. He had some Harry Reid supporters and some T. Twizzler Angler supporters duking it out. He had two women who supported Harry Reid and one angry angle backer taking to fisticuffs, if you will. It all started, from what I understand, as a woman was getting up to leave, and Mr. T. Twizzler basically, from what the reports are, pushed her, almost pushed her over the seat in front of him, because it's like a theater, evidently. You know, how the seats are secure, and it's a pain in the neck getting in and out of the seats. Well, Mr. T. Twizzler got angry and evidently gave her a little shove, and she gave him a little shot, and that's when things went interesting. So, you know, I guess no cookies there.
They actually did show a picture of him, and he gave her a pretty good right. Now, I don't care what she did. I don't care what she did. You don't hit women. And the reports are, Rick, to be fair, that she had her finger in his face.
Of course she did.
But you still don't hit the woman.
Well, you know.
You know, that's classless.
Well, what do you, come on. Are you shocked?
And I understand, I believe it was Nevada. I believe Harry didn't even show up.
Well, no, he was in Washington. He's got a job to do. I'm sorry. You know, I would actually be ticked if he weren't doing his job, if he were at some T. Twizzler rally.
I believe they did play. No, it was a rally.
It was a forum.
It was a forum, right, and he did send a recorded message. Yes.
Something. But yeah. He wasn't there. The key here is you're at a church, you got people going to fisticuffs over this stuff. Folks, it's not that. It's not worth that. And what bothers me is the heightened rhetoric. The fact that, you know, you've got somebody like Angle who's saying, well, you know, might have to go to the bullet box. No. You know, I was talking to a guy today at the gas station. I stopped to get some gas and, you know, pick up some other things at the gas station. The guy was from, he told me he was from Latin America. I think he was from Venezuela. Didn't want to say he was from Venezuela. But he said he was from Latin America. And he says, back home, people are scared to death what's going on here in the U.S. Because what they're seeing, according to this guy, is they're seeing the kind of instability that you see in Latin American countries with wild swings in leadership. And he said, you know, the American experience is interesting because you can have this peaceful transfer of power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Clinton left office, Bush took over, a peaceful transfer, even though you were ideologically opposed. When Bush left office, Obama took over, peaceful. What he's saying is, look, I'm worried that, you know, very soon you're going to see people who are so fired up and so misinformed that we're going to end up like Latin America. And I think the guy had a very valid point.
Absolutely. Well, and then on, you talk about violence at these events, Rick. You have Glenn Beck making accusations that there's violence on the left and it's going to increase. Well, you know, what does he do by that rhetoric? He's increasing the chances of there being violence.
Well, because he's putting you on notice, you know, those thugs, they're out there. You know, that kind of rhetoric we don't need, man. What we need to do is we need to have a conversation. And I encourage people who disagree with me to come on this program and have a rational discussion. Tell me what it is that you believe in. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Look, at the end of this, brother, we're still fighting for the same things, I think. All I want is I want my kids to grow up in a safe, sane area where they can go to a good quality school, have a good quality education, so that they can have the kind of life that I've had with opportunity.
I think what's scary, Rick, the way it used to work, and to some degree in some areas of the country it still does, you have both parties, you come together, you argue, you have differences, but you meet somewhere either in the middle or a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, and in most issues you can find common ground. There's no common ground. You talk to these Tea Party people, there's no, what do we agree on?
Well,
I can't find one issue that we agree with most of them.
I think that the problem is they have been so indoctrinated. And they're not the ones that I really want to talk to. Because, again, they're a small fringe element. I don't think they're more than 5 or 10%, which is still a lot of people. But it's not the majority. I think the majority of the country is not involved yet. And that's what worries me. It's this apathy. That we've got a large segment of the people in this country who are so busy trying to make a living, so busy trying to keep their head above water, so busy trying to not lose their home and hoping they don't lose their job or their health insurance, that they're not paying attention. And all they are hearing is the corporate message. What's being piped over the airwaves, what's plastered on the TV in front of them, the Google ads on every screen of their computer telling them that Pat Toomey is a great guy and Joe Sestak's too liberal. It's constant. They're in your ear constantly. And it comes down to money. The wealthy in this country, and throughout history, doesn't matter what country, the wealthy have always been able to pit us against each other. You know, to me, it's not an overused quote. Railroad magnate Jay Gould said, I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. And he was as right in 1890 as he would have been if he said it today. Because look at how divided we are. You know, look at 2004 when John Kerry ran for president. You got a guy who's got three Purple Hearts. Somehow he was a coward. Because the Swift boat people with a bunch of money from some rich people were able to torpedo his campaign. I mean, stop and think about that for a bit. That scares me.
Well, Rick, I gotta disagree with you a little bit on the numbers. I do believe maybe the real hardcore is 5 to 10, but their influence, their ability to call it what you want, bring them in or drag them into their movement, I think the percentages are a little bit higher than that.
I'm talking about people who are actively involved. There's about 5%, I think. Now, do people sympathize with them? Yeah, I sympathize with some of it. Look, I am taxed enough already. I am. I get it. But the answer is not, hey, let's destroy government. Let's kick those poor people out on the curb and you know, to heck with granny. And that's not the answer. That is absolutely not the answer. The answer is not more, oh, benevolent corporation, we bow to thee. That is not the answer. I mean, look at this Marcellus Shale thing. There are people actually arguing that companies will not come here if we put a tax on the oil, on the natural gas.
Ludicrous.
Well, where do you think they're going to get it from? It's here. But you got people who, well, you know, we tax it, they won't come. If we put regulation on it and we're not willing to let our environment go to pot, they may not come. Then let them go somewhere else. And I got an idea. Why don't we do it? Why don't we, the taxpayers, say, you know what? We're going to invest some money in some drilling rigs and put a couple holes in the ground and start sucking that stuff up and, you know, maybe supply cheap natural gas to all the citizens to heat their homes. Why not?
Isn't it amazing, those, and we're talking about the Senate here in this state, controlled by the Republicans. The same people didn't want to tax them and last year because they didn't have the political will to tax. The treasury of this state lost $60 million and we needed every dollar we could get our hands on. These same people are willing to cut programs for the very needy.
And
it absolutely amazes me.
And that's why we have got to fight back. We're going to take a quick break right here. We'll be back. What do you think it means to be middle class? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back.
in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
An estimated 1.5 to 2 million people Thursday protested a plan to raise the minimum retirement age in France from 60 to 62. The retirement benefits cut would also raise the age for full retirement benefits, regardless of number of years worked, from 65 to 67. Widespread protest strikes had a huge impact on transportation and other public services. French workers and their unions see these changes as a tax on the social support system built by workers and their unions over many years. Workers Independent News executive producer Frank Emspach was at the demonstration in the streets of Paris.
There's more private sector workers who have gone on strike today, and not only in Paris, but throughout France. In every major city, there is some kind of huge demonstration. I'm in Paris, and you can hear in the background, I think, some of the noise and some of the marchers. The line extends from the Place de Bastille, which is on one side of Paris, all the way without break to the other side at another major square. It's probably about a mile and a half. It's actually shoulder to shoulder, thousands and thousands of people, all political persuasions, down this vast avenue. Most of the people, at least half, are young people. And they have said to us in French, it's hard for me to translate on this phone, but they said to me in French, if they're fighting for the future, they're not going to tolerate this kind of attack on their parents who've worked or themselves. This is the beginning of what appears to be a nationwide political mobilization. People have had it. They've demanded a referendum because Sarkozy, the premier, ran on the basis that he would not do this to the pensions. So they are now directly attacking the government's legitimacy.
The United Auto Workers Farm Labor Organizing Committee, Rainbow Push, and some clergy are announcing today that they're withdrawing hundreds of millions of dollars from Chase Bank. It's a protest against J.P. Morgan Chase's refusal to declare a two-year moratorium on home foreclosures in Michigan and the bank's continuing ties with R.J. Reynolds Corporation. UAW President Bob King says Chase could make a huge difference to help unemployed homeowners in Michigan and unpaid farm workers in the Carolinas if the banks would suspend foreclosures and pressure R.J. Reynolds to do the right thing by farm workers. The UAW and community leaders in Michigan also want Michigan Democratic Congressman John Conyers to hold hearings on the failure of Chase and other banks to effectively implement federal programs to help keep people in their homes. United Steelworkers Vice President Gary Beavers says the oil industry's run-to-failure mentality concerning equipment is getting worse every day. Beavers says it's motivated by money, and the union says it compromises safety, and the industry needs to return to more frequent turnovers, times when the refineries are shut down for maintenance. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. Who's gonna work for the working man?
That's the question. I mean, that's what this November is really about. If you stop and you really think about it, it's who's going to stand up and fight for the working people of this country. On one hand, you've got the Republicans who seem to be obsessed with the sperm donors, with the sperm lottery winners, the inheritance P class. People like the guy running for Senate in West Virginia who said, you know, I got my money the old-fashioned way. I inherited it. You got to give him credit for being honest. But his needs are not my needs. They're not your needs. They're not our needs. And the question I guess I have is, what does it mean to be middle class? What is the American dream? Are we losing that American dream? What's our future for our children? What's that going to be? Are they going to have better opportunities than we had? Better opportunities than our parents' generation had? I don't know. But if we make the wrong decision this November and go back to the policies that got us into this mess in the first place, I don't see good things for our children. I see us moving farther and farther apart. I see that gulf between those who have and those who haven't lost everything yet widening. So what does it mean to be middle class? I remember a woman that I met at a gas station. Her idea was that she was middle class. She made $16,000 a year. She was middle class because she didn't have to ask the government for any help. She was proud of the fact that she did not have to ask for food stamps or heating assistance, that on the $16,000 she made, she was able to support herself. Now, she admitted she didn't have health care. She didn't have any pension fund. She was in her 40s. And you look at this and you go, are you truly middle class? Can you possibly be middle class without health security, without some sort of health insurance, so if you do get sick, you don't lose everything you've ever worked for? You don't end up bankrupt. You don't end up being foreclosed on because you can't pay the medical bill. Can you possibly be middle class without old age security, so that when you can no longer work and your body is broken down, that you have enough money that you can feed yourself and put a roof over your head and heat your home in the winter, so you're not one of somebody like the guy last year, 93 years old, froze to death in his house because the electric company put a limiter on his power that shorted out, and he froze to death in his own home. Can you possibly be middle class? I don't think so, Jake.
That lady you're talking about, I'm assuming on that kind of income, she doesn't own her house, or does she?
No, she didn't. She didn't own her house.
I don't see how you could possibly.
And the car she was driving was several years old. But look, and this is what I understand. I understand that work ethic that I take care of myself, and you know I'm gonna do the best I can do, and I'm gonna be proud of what I do, and I'm gonna be proud of my accomplishments. I understand that. I do, but I don't see that you can possibly be in the middle class in that situation.
Not at that level. She's actually, she doesn't realize it, but she's poor. She's definitely poor.
But, you know, can you take someone's pride away? Can you say that, I'm sorry, you're not in the middle class? Most people don't want to hear that, Jake. Most people want to, they want to feel proud of themselves. And, look,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, and I encourage
I grew up with people, Rick, that were poor, but, you know, they took pride in having a clean house. Their kids' clothes were clean. Their children was clean. And they took pride in it, and there's nothing wrong with that. They had that attitude that no matter what we have, whatever I have, I'm going to make the most of it. And that is the American way. However, you reach a point where, because of your income, you really can't make it.
And here's the thing. We hear all this talk about taxes. We hear all this talk about, oh, you won't redistribute wealth. And the truth of the matter is yeah, to a degree. Greg Easterbrook had an interesting piece here over at Reuters. He wrote, quote, federal income tax rates for the middle class were cut in 2001 and again in 2003. Because of the cuts in 2000, 29% of American households paid no federal income tax. Today, 44% pay none. The result is that slightly lower middle class incomes are being taxed less. And all that matters to the individual is buying power. The Tea Party crowd, he writes, which claims taxes are rising, doesn't like to talk about the reality that taxes are falling. Taxes, not spending increases, are the main reason for rising deficits. The left doesn't like to talk about after-tax income. Only pre-tax numbers are used because they're the only number that are disturbing. And what he's saying is, look, our tax code at the bottom is pretty good. We're helping people like this woman make a living. The $16,000 she made, Jake, she paid no federal income tax on now. That's good for small businesses where she worked because they don't have to. They don't have to pay her higher wages to make up for the taxes, because I've often said the taxes don't matter. Wages are going to go to where people can make a living. And what's interesting to me is, going back to this woman, is how little she actually made and still thought she was in the middle class.
And she probably, if her pride notwithstanding, if she wanted some, she could probably apply for a couple programs and qualify.
Absolutely. But here's the other part of this. If we don't extend this tax cut that the Bush people put out for the bottom 98% of us, her taxes will go up and she will end up having to pay more, and wages will have to go up, and small businesses are going to have to pay a little bit more because she's still going to need that $16,000. No matter how you want to look at it, post-tax, pre-tax, how she still needs the money she needs to exist. And if we did nothing, and this is where I'm angry with Harry Reid, because I think they should be pushing hard for this. Pass every one of those tax breaks except for at the very top. Because even if you do that, even if you pass everything for the top, for the bottom 98%, the top 2% still get a cut. All they're not getting is that very top of the top. They're not getting the top marginal rate cut. They're getting all the other ones below, so they're still getting a nice chunk of change in their pocket. They're just not getting the cream on the top. They're not getting the cherry on the top of their sundae. Well, they're getting a cherry. They're just not getting two in this case. And look, you know, the real crisis, if we really want to talk about it, and Michael Snyder over at Alternet pulled together some really interesting statistics that I wanted to go through that are really slowly eviscerating the middle class. You look at the fact that 45 million Americans were living in poverty in 2009. 45 million people living in poverty. According to the Associated Press, experts believe that 2009 saw the largest single year increase in poverty since they began taking figures back in 59. Poverty is on an upswing. Now the third worst among developing nations. So we got a real problem. Let's take a quick call. We got Mike on line one. How are we doing today, Mike?
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
I'm good.
Hey, you know, talking about the taxes, I'm one of those strange people that years ago actually tracked down and read large segments of the tax code to try to understand it.
Right.
And looked at the history of the income tax actually beginning in 1862 when Lincoln first passed an income tax to raise money for the Civil War, which was subsequently struck down by the Supreme Court. And all that research has said to me is that I don't believe working people should be taxed. I don't think there was ever an intention that people who earn a living with their hands, that that's their only source of income, would be taxed at all.
Right.
And that what was supposed to be taxed were two things, basically. Imports, tariffs, and profits. And the difference in profit is that if you go out and you swing a hammer doing something, you get paid for it. That's income. But if you get enough money swinging that hammer to buy an apartment that you rent out, the rent is profit because you're not making that money with your own physical labor.
Correct. And pretty much the exact opposite of what our current tax code does.
That's right.
Because we've got people, because what we've got are we've got people who are swinging that hammer, paying higher rates of tax, and a guy sitting on his yacht collecting dividend checks off of Wall Street.
That's correct. And one of the big taxes that working people pay, and they don't think of it as a tax, but it is Social Security. We pay 7.5% thereabout on a certain amount of money for Social Security. However, there are many people who make their living on investments or whatever. They don't pay Social Security on that money.
Nope.
They don't pay a dime. But the working guy's income is subjected to it.
Well, as I've said a number of times, the largest tax increase in the history of civilization came during the Reagan years when they decided that they were going to have the baby boom generation pay for their own Social Security, and they raised Social Security tax from something like 3.5% all the way up to 13% where it is now.
That's true. And if you really want to have some fun, go back and read the the 1986 income tax modification under the Reagan administration.
Were they taxed unemployment benefits for the first time and slapped working people in the face again?
Yep. And, but what's really interesting is that tax code had certain corporations written in by name to be treated in certain ways. As I recall, Weyerhaeuser Lumber was one of them, I recall reading at the time.
Well, they paid their lobbyists well, I guess.
And that's my problem. I would really like them to see that you basically, if you get a W-2, you don't get taxes taken out. And you make up that difference by placing tariffs on all the cheesy imports coming in from China and everywhere else.
Like we used to do from the founding of the country, to, as you pointed out, up until the Civil War.
That's correct.
Excellent point. I appreciate the call, Mike. Thanks so much. As always, great information out of Mike, I got to tell you. But, you know, he brings up an interesting point. And this is one that I do believe about the tax code. And I've always said that, you know, if you make up to like $25,000, you should be taxed zero. And then you can small percent increments from there. But, you know, look, I would love to go to a system where we pay no income tax on the wages that we earn. It's what we don't earn that we are taxed on. And again, our system is upside down. Because if I'm swinging a hammer for a living, I'm paying a higher tax than a guy sitting on his yacht collecting a dividend check where he pays a flat tax of 15% capital gains.
Okay, let's take that to the natural conclusion. What if your earned income is $10 million a year? Would you tax any of that?
What are they doing with that? Well, I mean, and this is where this whole discussion has to go. I think Mike's saying no, because they're going to take that money and they're going to invest it, and then that investment money would then be taxed. So you would tax the investment at a much higher rate. That's an interesting question. And during the break, we'll think about that a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, let me ask you. Let's go ahead.
We'll come back from the break. We'll pick that up on the other side of the break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Should we do that? Sounds like a great idea. We're right back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
John Boehner is known for his ties and his tan. You've probably never heard of this Ohio Republican who's been the minority leader for 4 years, but he has big plans to be the next Speaker of the U.S. House. Who is he? For clues, look no further than those ties and that tan. The tan is odd, both because it has an eerie orange hue to it and because it never goes away. Even in the dead of winter, this GOP leader from sun-starved Ohio has such a perpetual glow that he's been nicknamed Suntan Johnny. How does he get the glow? By routinely flying on corporate jets to play golf with corporate lobbyists on various corporate tabs at such sun-drenched resorts as the Ritz-Carlton in Naples, Florida. Which brings us to his ties. By which I don't mean the flashy silk neckwear he favors. Rather, I mean Boehner's flagrant ties to a clique of powerful influence peddlers. These ties go way back. In 1996, he was caught passing checks from tobacco lobbyists to fellow Republicans on the House floor. His inner circle of special interests is so cozy that it's even been given its own nickname, Boehnerland. Outsiders need not apply, for Boehnerland is an exclusive place inhabited by about 20 lobbyists for such outfits as Citigroup, R.J. Reynolds, Coors, Goldman Sachs, Google, and UPS. They put millions of campaign dollars into his pockets, fly him around, wine and dine him at the finest restaurants, and sustain his political ambitions. In turn, Boehner is their boy. One member of Suntan Johnny's corrupt club candidly told the New York Times that he regularly gets Boehner's help for his clients, ranging from fighting limits on debit card fees to protecting tax breaks for hedge fund operators. This is Jim Hightower saying they want Boehner to become Speaker for one reason. He's fluent in corporate speak.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow.
I want to say hello to all of our Ustream viewers. Thanks for tuning in. Again, you can pick up the show, those of you listening on terrestrial radio. You can watch the show at our website, thericksmithshow.com. We do a live video stream with the Ustream people. And I want to say hi to Della out there driving home. Thanks for listening to the program. This is how we're going to get the message out. This is how we're going to change this country, by all of us coming together and fighting back. And I want to go back to some of these 15 points that Mr. Snyder put in his piece over at Aldernet, because I think they're important. The number four that he came up with, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, on a year-over-year basis, household participation in food stamp programs has increased by almost 20.8%. That's a huge jump. His number five, the number of Americans on food stamps surpassed 41 million the first time ever in June. As of June, the number of Americans on food stamps had set an all-time new high, a record for 19 consecutive months. And you see the fact that one out of every six Americans is now being served by at least one government anti-poverty program. And why do I think that's important? And why these food stamp programs are important and the government programs are important? Because in 2008, when the economy collapsed, understand this, because this is important. Without those programs, we have mass chaos. We have people starving in the streets. And it's those programs that stop this economy from continually spiraling down at a faster and faster pace. You've now got more than 50 million Americans on Medicaid. Another example of people not getting health care from their jobs, poor people not being able to find jobs. Also, one out of every seven mortgages in this country was either delinquent or in foreclosure in the first quarter of 2010. That's telling me, not that we got a bunch of irresponsible people. That's telling me we got a bunch of people who are struggling to get by. That's what it's telling me. We've got nearly 10 million people now receiving unemployment benefits. Four times as many as we had in 2007. And again, without that unemployment, without that food stamps program, without the other programs to help prop up the bottom of the economic scale, we have a mass collapse. And if you look at the number of Americans receiving long-term unemployment benefits, that's risen by 60% in just the past year. So we're seeing people who are unemployed longer and need help longer. What you're getting from the Republicans is saying, the one T-twizzler is saying, well, unemployment extensions are unconstitutional. And I'm a lawyer. I should know. Evidently, you don't know. Another one is, according to one recent survey, 28% of all households have at least one member looking for a job. That, to me, is staggering. Nationwide bankruptcy filings rose 20% in the 12 months ending June 30th. So we're seeing more people struggling. And until we figure out how to get this economy moving, and I'm telling you how to do it, the easiest way to get this economy moving is spur demand. Stop handing out tax cuts. Stop saying, oh, we're going to give incentives to small businesses. You know what small businesses want? They want customers. They want people to come in the door and say, you know what? Give me 100 of those. Make me a sign. Make me a computer. Put a solar panel on my house. Oh, you know what? Build a road. Hey, how about fixing the one that's out front here? That's how we get this economy moving. You get those workers on the job who feel a little secure. You know, because having a secure workforce who knows, you know, hey, what? Tomorrow I may still have a job, so maybe I'd like to have that. and I'm going to go buy me something. That's how you spur an economy. That's how you get an economy spiraling upward, by giving people a little confidence. You know, the guy who works on the local construction project, the local worker who works the local construction project, making prevailing wages, he can take some of that money that he's earning and go, you know what? Take his wife to the restaurant on the corner that our buddy owns, the pizza shop that our buddy owns, and have a pie every now and then. And you know what? That puts money in the pizza pie guy's pocket. And maybe go to the theater, see a movie. Puts money in their pocket. It stimulates the growth. And you know what? That's a snowballing up, and it's a good thing, which is why I'm tired of these stupid little plans. Oh, we're gonna give tax breaks. Stop with the tax breaks. Buy something.
You're talking about the economic divide, which is getting ever wider. What bothers me equally as much, Rick, is the cultural divide that we have. What do I mean? I happen to be working at a phone bank. And we were trying to get people to, you know, support our candidates. And the first thing out of the man's mouth after I told him who I would like him to support was, well, I'm not going to vote for the communist in the White House or the communist Democrats.
See, hang up on it. Say, thank you, have a nice day, and hang up.
Well, but here's the thing. And his last, and we talked about this off air, but I have a different take on it. And his last sentence was, I believe President Obama to be the most evil man in the face of the earth. My point is this. You have some people that they have such a perception of what our democracy should be. They have such a perception of values and what our values should or shouldn't be. There's this, in my mind, there's this great divide. And I don't know how we bridge that divide, Rick.
With him, there is no bridging the divide. You're never. You could talk to you were green in the shirt, and you're never going to change that guy's opinion.
But there's some people who aren't as violent in their language, who feel the same way. The one side can't relate to the other, and it's. To me, it's very, very troubling. As a nation, it's dividing us long term if we don't find a way out to bridge that gap, that cultural divide, and I don't know if we ever can. But somewhere along the line, we're going to have to learn how to live together and work together and find that common ground. And right now, that's one of the big problems in the country. We don't find that common ground. And I get the perception that you don't think it's that great. I do.
I don't. Look, what we're hearing in the media constantly, and that's my opinion, is we're hearing constantly that guy. Instead of just saying, and he's being propped up by a media structure that is encouraging this to keep us divided, to keep us thinking, oh, well, gee, the gulf is so wide between the crazy people and the rest of us. And you're right. The crazy people are way off on the fringe. But the problem is we're giving them a platform. Because Rupert Murdoch owns a whole bunch of media outlets. You've got six corporations that own about 80% of everything we see, hear, and read. And that's the mean that they're using to keep us demoralized and keep us disenfranchised. It's my opinion on it. You know, come November, I may be wrong. And you may be right. The T-Twizzlers might be 70% of the country, and it's a landslide, and all
no,
the Democrats
no,
get washed
no, this
out.
This isn't just about the Tea Party.
No, it's not.
It's not just about the Tea Party. I know a lot of people that tend to be on the conservative side, and when you start talking, what you were talking about, simple justice, simple tax justice, simple economic justice, it's you know, it goes right over their heads. There's no, that's not in our thought process. And I don't know how you get through to people that if we lack justice in this country, be it economic or could be any, it could be simple laws of the land, if we don't have simple justice on those levels, as a democracy, we lose. And yet the perception is, well, we don't need that. And I find that very, very troubling. I think there is a divide, Rick. I really do. Has it been exasperated? Yes. Have those who feel that way maybe had a disproportionate voice on that side? Yes. But I do believe there's a big chasm. And what's troubling, it seems like more and more and more people are either on this side or that side. And I do find that troubling. I think that's going to be a very destructive to our democracy if we don't find a way to bridge that.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
On June 25th, 1938, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law. Viewed as one of the final pieces of legislation of FDR's New Deal and the single most worker-friendly piece of legislation ever written, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was a victory not only for labor unions, but for workers, families, and children across the country. FDR called the new law the most far-reaching, far-sighted program for the benefit of workers ever adopted in this or any other country. This visionary piece of legislation put a ceiling over hours and a floor under wages, mandating a 44-hour work week, a 25-cent minimum wage, and time and a half for overtime. The Fair Labor Standards Act was later amended to 40 hours per week and 40 cents per hour. The law also excluded children from working dangerous jobs and set standard conditions for the employment of child workers to avoid continued exploitation of children. The Fair Labor Standards Act has been changed or amended at least 43 different times. These alterations have been used both to expand worker protections, such as raising the minimum wage, prohibiting age discrimination, and requiring equal pay, and to restrict and take away protections such as the Taft-Hartley Act and the 2004 Fair Pay Amendment. Today, we take the 40-hour work week, minimum wages, overtime, and child labor protections for granted. But up until the passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, workers were at the mercy of their employers, and children were dying in industrial accidents. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Hello, I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing. So is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, during the break, we were talking about the end of the last segment. And, you know, I guess I'm not as down, and I don't think things are as dire as you do, Jake. I'm not buying into this right-wing meme. Yeah, there are some people out there who right now feel emboldened. They feel that, you know, it's everything's on their side, and they're going to be able to pretty much have their way. But I think that's a small number. Now, I will agree that a large number of people, as I've said, identify with some of that anger. They're just not as militant. So the question then becomes, I mean, you look at Beccapalooza. You know, they got like 85, 87,000 people to show up, or 3 million or 10 million, depending on, you know, who you want to believe. I'll believe the people who took the pictures and mapped it out. The question then becomes, what do we do about it? you know, here on October the 2nd, you know, labor is going to have their opportunity to get boots out into the street. We're going to see people who show up, people who go door knocking in their communities that day. Look, it comes down to basic organizing. And the thing that you have to understand about the Tea Party, with huge resources behind them from the Koch brothers and these really very wealthy donors, they are doing the hard work of organizing that labor used to do and needs to do again. It's that simple for me. I mean, I guess I'm not going to buy into the mean that, you know, oh, everything's dire and the majority of the country is, you know, insane. I think once we get the economy turned around, people start to see that there are jobs, people start to see that this health care bill is helping affect their lives in a positive way, and they turn off the insane messaging that's coming at them 24/7, we got a shot.
Are we ever going to change the fact that the corporations control the media? That's going to be a tremendous...
We've been here before, Jake. I mean, you go back to the Hearst papers 100 years ago. I mean, when the muckrakers, you know, when they... Come on! We've been here before. And we can do this again. I mean, it comes down to, you know, doing what you do. Go knocking on people's... Go play knock-knock on people's doors.
No, I'm not saying that our side can't win. I think being a realist and know that there is a great divide, and I truly believe that. And it's more than just the Tea Party. A lot of it's cultural. It was even before the advent of the Tea Party. It's cultural. And I believe some of these, yes, you're right, some of these economic woes brought a higher intensity, but I think some of these basic feelings were always there.
Of course they've always been there. I mean, you've always had, that's the great thing about this country. We can all have differing opinions. And you and I don't always have to agree, but we don't have to kill each other. And we don't have to beat each other up in a church. I mean, I guess I'm just not as hopeless as you've made it sound.
Well, I mean, the truth is right now, let's be honest. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that right now we're in a conservative swing. And history ebbs and flows, and oftentimes when times are tough, people's true feelings come out. I would hope that I'm overestimating the divide, but there's a lot of people that I know that, boy, we live in two different worlds. And it's not just poor people, Rick. It's not just economic.
Let's just throw up our hands.
No, not at all.
So then what's the point?
Not at all. My point is we have to find the answers for the sake of our children. It's not just economic.
And those
I don't have all the answers. I don't know that anyone does. First thing you do is attack the economic inequities. That's a big part of it. But there's more to it than that. And I don't know all the answers, right? I don't know that anyone does. I'm just telling you my gut feelings and things that I see. And I know people that some people have money, some people are middle class, some people are poor. And there's just that, I don't know, they live in a different world.
All right. 1-888-RICK, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What are your thoughts on this? Is the golf as great as Jake thinks it is? I'm going to say I don't think it is. Getting back to our original topic, what is the American dream? I think Bernard Duesman writes, and this is an interesting observation. He writes, it's a belief that the American dream is, if you work hard, you get ahead. And he says that's neat shorthand for the concept that the American social and economic and political systems make success possible for everyone. And basically, a level playing field, equal opportunities. And I think that's where part of this divide is. that people may not see that there's equal opportunities and that there is equality. You going to participate?
I agree with that. I agree with that.
Let's take a quick call. We got Dave on line one. How are we doing tonight, Dave?
Hey, pretty fair, Rick. And I very much enjoy you and your guests and your show. But I tried to share with you just recently my belief that Republicans in their own heavy way really cheat. And we are now going into this electronic era, and wherever it's possible, they invade our computers and our phones. And so I think it's not just that there were in the past people who would cheat and count the paper ballots wrong or whatnot. By now, there can be precincts where you've got 200 registered voters that deliver 6,000-7,000 votes to the side that they want. That's not possible. We demand a recount. Well, what are you going to count? A lot of these electronic machines, there is nothing there to be counted. So I'd love to be hearing more from you and from every progressive talk show. We need to be doing something about the fact that we are now in a technology era where they can cheat, and cheat they do. These voting machines are totally in the hands of big corporate special interests, and they're deciding who they want. And that's what we get left with. And that's stealing democracy from us. And you don't get much worse than that, in my opinion.
I agree with you, Dave. And look, you know, I was against the voting machines, these electronic no-paper trail machines from the very beginning. I'm against anything where you can flip the vote total with the flip of a switch. I don't think they're going anywhere. I think we're stuck with this.
Well, I think it's worse than people realize. You know, like right now, these polling companies that give us public opinion polls, and they gather all that data and they put it into computers to tabulate it and to put the data out. And these same computers are invaded by these same high-tech Patriot Act type troopers, and they think, how would we like the statistics to come out? How would we like the poll to read? Well, it shows that most people would like to have more abuse from Republicans. That's what it shows.
It's an interesting point. And I think it does kind of go into maybe what we're talking about here, that maybe everything we're hearing is just shadows.
Well, I have no faith in this at all. I heard how the humorous way it was put, that 98% of all statistics are rigged, including this one.
Yep. Good point, Dave. I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
You got a thought on the voting machines?
Voting machines?
Yeah.
No, I'll pass on that one for the moment.
Why don't we take a quick break right here? We'll be back. Your call is 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here
at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution that sounds like a whisper. Don't you know,
together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
Well, again, you know, I asked the question, what is the American dream? And as Bernard Duesman says, his thought is, if you work hard, you get ahead. That there's a level playing field. There's equal opportunity. There's equality. And Duesman goes on to say the statistic that best explains growing doubts over the achievability of the American dream was released by the Census Bureau in mid-September. In 2009, the Bureau said 3.8 million people joined the ranks of the poor by falling below the poverty line as defined by the government, being $22,000 a year for a family of four. He writes, in contrast, the net worth of the 400 richest Americans rose by a healthy 8% in the year to August. According to the list by the business magazine Forbes, he writes that the poverty, that the rich are right now enjoying the greatest inequality that we've had since the Great Depression. You stop and think about the fact that for almost four decades now, annual incomes for the bottom 90% have basically changed none, nothing. But what the one top 1% is taking, that number has tripled. And so I guess the question is, you know, how bad is it going to get? I mean, the U.S. is looking closer to the wealth distribution of countries like Iran and Argentina and Mexico than they are to Canada and Germany. How bad is it going to get? You talk about the two Americas, you know, those who have and those who still have stuff to lose. Remember, last year alone, as Duesman points out, 2.8 million foreclosures, that's 7,700 foreclosures a day. Those are people who could no longer afford their homes. And not because they were irresponsible or stupid or any of those things that the right loves to paint them as. They lost their house because the economy collapsed. And the thieves and the marauders in Wall Street came down and swooped up the rest. The vultures took it away. So how bad does it have to get? Do we want to go back to the Bush policies? Do we want to go back to the days when we were given massive handouts to the very wealthy? So I guess the question I have is, there was a poll recently said 43% of the people in this country believe the American dream is dead. I don't. I think we can fight for our kids. I think we can make the American dream a reality. It's been a reality for me. And, you know, we can get all depressed and go, oh, my God, the sky is falling. Everyone's against us. Or we can choose to stand up and fight. And I am not going to give in to the right-wing meme that everybody is against the health care bill. I'm not going to give in to the right-wing meme that everybody's in favor of giving tax credits to the wealthy, even though poll after poll shows that they're not. I guess I'm just not that willing to give that up. And on October 2nd, we're going to see people come out into the streets. The One Nation Working Together March, onenationworkingtogether.org. We're going to see what happens. What we need to be doing is we need to be changing the economy so it works for us. We need a higher minimum wage. We need to do more federal building with project labor agreements so that we can have decent local contractors paying reasonable wages. And again, you know, there are a lot of people who are not happy. And how you change that is you turn the economy around. I mean, Jake, I'm, yeah. I'm just not there. I'm just not there with you. And I don't know if you're just in a bad mood today or what the deal was. If knocking on doors or making phone calls put you in a funk because of the people that you were talking to, I don't know.
No, I'm just relating. I mean, we're all a product of our environment. I'm just saying, and people that I come in contact with, there's a disturbing number of people who just don't get it. I don't know how I can say it any better than that. They just don't get it. When you talk to them about the problems of the country, they have a different take on it. They just come from a much different approach. Look, one thing I learned in the labor movement, Rick, struggle never ends. I'm certainly not saying that we can win this. History ebbs and flows, and right now, you know, the conservatives are on a roll.
Well, I mean,
we can change that. We can change that. I'm far from saying that it's an impossible goal. All I'm saying is, there seems to be a part of America that just isn't in tune with what we're trying to say to them.
So what I'm saying, and look, you know, if you're being inundated constantly with the message, which you turn on virtually any TV show, any news show, that's what you're getting. You turn on talk radio, all you're getting is that message. What are you going to, what do you think most people are going to move toward? And I'm a firm believer that you've got a small percentage on either side of any issue. 5-10% on either side of any issue. And then you have the mass middle. And most of those people are not engaged. All they're taking, they're collecting information by osmosis. They're bebopping down the road, listening to the radio, and the news report comes out at the top of the hour, and it's bad news, bad news, bad news. Mike Huckleberry comes on with his 3-minute report about how, oh, you know, we can't give health care to people with pre-existing conditions because it's like burning down a house. If you're inundated with the message constantly, and you're constantly being berated by bad news, and Obama's a socialist and not a citizen, and you know, he doesn't have a birth certificate and all the other crazy nonsense. What's the average person who's not engaged supposed to come away with?
No, I understand that the media has a tremendous effect. You just got to keep fighting. You just got to keep fighting at all levels, politically, in the streets. It's a tough struggle.
I mean,
it's not
going
to get any easier.
Stop and look at all the money that's gone into this. And Politico did a great piece today. The top 10 guys who left George W. Bush, walked away from John McCain, they are back. And they are spending big, big bucks. Politico did an analysis of some conservative donor information. $19 million these guys have given to Republican candidates. Just a handful of guys. And that's not even taking into account all the money that they're spending on groups like American Crossroads, you know, the Karl Rove Front Group, that they've given almost $8 million to run their attack ads. That has nothing to do with the American Action Network, who's gotten millions of dollars to go after. And, you know, this is what the guy said, this guy Fred Malik. He's kicked in about 700 grand this cycle to fight President Obama's anti-business policies, because they've caused an unprecedented alarm among conservative business leaders. Remember, business leaders, the people who put us in this mess. He said, and it's resulting in unprecedented giving by those in the position to give who want to protect what they've built over the last century in America. We're protecting the investor class. And you go down the list, you know, Bob Perry, a whole big home builder, almost $3 million they've handed out this so far that they can find. This is only the money that they can find that these guys have given away. Harold Simmons, a big investor, he's worth $4.5 billion, gave $2.7 million to people that we can track. And you go down the list, you know, Trevor Jones, $2.3 million, the Koch family, $2 million. We have no idea what they spent on the Tea Party. We have no idea how much he's pumped into the Tea Party. This is just candidate giving, because they have to report, the candidates have to report what they get. You know, down the line, $1.6 million, $1.6 million, $1.4 million, just millions of dollars going into these Republicans' hands. And we, again, have no idea how much is going into these 401C4 groups. We have no idea. Why? Obviously, since Citizens United, you don't have to disclose it. And they can spend as much as they want, which is why the airwaves are just bombarding us with the pro-corporate message.
You didn't even get into the you know, the business organization, the chamber. $75 million. And that was a couple months ago, and I'm sure that amount has gone up.
Well, no, these are 10 guys who've walked away from the party, and they're back now. They're given big bucks. And again, you throw them into these front groups, Americans for Prosperity, Freedom Works, American Crossroads. All such wonderful, flowery names, such good aspirations, and they're out to destroy the working class of this country. And they are loaded to bear. And I go back to what my grandfather always said. If a rich guy is going to spend a buck to convince you of something, you better spend two to get what he's telling you not to get. And this is exactly what I'm saying we need to be looking at. Think of how much money they're spending in ads, and how much money they're spending to convince you that this health care bill is bad. Think about how much money is going into this fund. And I'm telling you, you need it. I may not be happy with the end result so far, but if we can keep this and keep moving forward, I think it will be a good thing. And I think our grandchildren will look at it like we look at Medicare.
Well, look, I mean, the Republicans and the corporate interest, I mean, whatever you think of them, they're not dummies. They understand that they have to get control of the Congress right now, because Obama's taking this country in the right direction. They understand that, and they are going to go all out. They're going to spend a sea of money. I mean, they're smart. Let's be honest, they had control of this country for 8 years. Obama's come along. He's trying to turn that ship. I mean, he's got a tremendous responsibility here, and he's done some good things. The Republicans don't like that, and they know that this is their chance to nip it in the bud.
Yep, I agree. Again, for all of our friends watching on Ustream, thank you for being here tonight. We look forward to having you back each and every night as we do stream the live video from our studio here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. You can listen to us on the local radio terrestrial station at therickssmithshow.com or with our friends over at the Head On Radio Network. Bob Kincaid does an outstanding job running the horn, and I'm happy to have the horn listeners along with us. We're going to take a quick break here. We're right back. We're going to talk about the big march coming up on October 2nd. Stick around. We're right back after this.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. An estimated 1.5 to 2 million people Thursday protested a plan to raise the minimum retirement age in France from 60 to 62. The retirement benefits cut would also raise the age for full retirement benefits, regardless of number of years worked, from 65 to 67. Widespread protest strikes had a huge impact on transportation and other public services. French workers and their unions see these changes as a tax on the social support system built by workers and their unions over many years. Workers Independent News executive producer Frank Emspach was at the demonstration in the streets of Paris.
There's more private sector workers who have gone on strike today, and not only in Paris, but throughout France. In every major city, there is some kind of huge demonstration. I'm in Paris, and you can hear in the background, I think, some of the noise and some of the marchers. The line extends from the Place de Bastille, which is on one side of Paris, all the way without break to the other side at another major square. It's probably about a mile and a half. It's actually shoulder to shoulder, thousands and thousands of people, all political persuasions, down this vast avenue. Most of the people, at least half, are young people. And they have said to us in French, it's hard for me to translate on this phone, but they said to me in French, they're fighting for the future. They're not going to tolerate this kind of attack on their parents who've worked or themselves. This is the beginning of what appears to be a nationwide political mobilization. People have had it. They've demanded a referendum because Sarkozy, the premier, ran on the basis that he would not do this to the pensions. So they are now directly attacking the government's legitimacy.
The United Auto Workers Farm Labor Organizing Committee, Rainbow Push, and some clergy are announcing today that they're withdrawing hundreds of millions of dollars from Chase Bank. It's a protest against J.P. Morgan Chase's refusal to declare a two-year moratorium on home foreclosures in Michigan and the bank's continuing ties with R.J. Reynolds Corporation. UAW President Bob King says Chase could make a huge difference to help unemployed homeowners in Michigan and unpaid farm workers in the Carolinas if the banks would suspend foreclosures and pressure R.J. Reynolds to do the right thing by farm workers. The UAW and community leaders in Michigan also want Michigan Democratic Congressman John Conyers to hold hearings on the failure of Chase and other banks to effectively implement federal programs to help keep people in their homes. United Steelworkers Vice President Gary Beavers says the oil industry's run-to-failure mentality concerning equipment is getting worse every day. Beavers says it's motivated by money, and the union says it compromises safety, and the industry needs to return to more frequent turnovers, times when the refineries are shut down for maintenance. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, on October the 2nd, there's a big rally planned in Washington, D.C. You know, I've been calling for this kind of thing for the longest time. We've been seeing the Tea Party people marching in the streets. We saw Becca Palooza not too long ago, people coming out in the streets. And I've been calling for the labor movement. I've been calling for the environmental people, the gay rights people. Get out in the streets. This is where this is going to be won, and the media has picked up on and said, look, you know, all the excitement's on the insane side. Rational people, you need to come out and show that this election isn't over. We're going to actually go to the polls, and there's going to be an opportunity for us to have our voices heard. But this March, October 2nd, I'm going to be there. Our entire staff is going to be there. It's important that we get out. I've asked Kimberly Freeman Brown, she's Executive Director of American Rights at Work, to come talk to us about the One Nation Working Together March. It's their website, onenationworkingtogether.org. There's a spot on our site at thericksmithshow.com for it. Kim, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick. It's so good to be with you.
You know, I'm looking at this date, October 2nd. Some of my friends are going, that's a door-knocking day. That's when we get our labor walks out. That's when we get people coming out. What should we do? Should we tell them, don't go knocking on doors, get to Washington and support this march?
Yes, I would say come and be with us at the march on October 2nd, and on October 3rd start your door knocking.
There you go. And then every day from then on.
Every day from then on.
What's the point of this? I mean, I've had some of my conservative friends, well, you're just copying us because we've got all the momentum. And what do you say to something stupid like that?
Well, I mean, no, they're really copying us, Rick. We know that this is the way that we've done things for decades. And that the way that we've shown a unified front to fight for the things that we care about within the progressive community, anything that the other side does is just really copying the things that we've always done. But on October 2nd, we're coming together. All sectors of civil society are coming together to really demand the change that we voted for in 2008. And to really stand up for working people and others who want our leaders to know that we need jobs in this country, we need good jobs in this country, and that we are going to be tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands strong in delivering that message.
Well, I'm hoping that to be the case because I'm tired of hearing my right-wing friends saying, you know, Glenn Beck had 87,000, no, wait, 100, no, wait, a half a million, no. 10 million people were there. I mean, every time you it just, you know, it's like that urban legend. It just keeps growing bigger. And if you listen to Fox News, you know, they with them piecing together different rallies from, you know, one from the summer, one from the winter, you know, you get all this big picture of people who weren't really there, but it makes a nice story.
That's true. Very true.
So let's talk about some of the reasons that we're going out there. You know, I understand unemployment. We need to create more jobs. We need to, you know, to bring more people in. What are some of the groups that are involved in this, and what are some of the work that they're doing?
Sure. I mean, they're literally every group that cares about social justice, economic justice, human rights, women's rights, the rights of working people and the poor are represented. We have labor unions, civil rights groups. Everyone, it's just been an outpouring of support to come and stand up and stand together and pull our nation back together through this One Nation rally on October 2nd. So that's who you'll see standing with you when you and your staff come.
Right. You know, the thing that I like about it is it's talking about how do we heal the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a lot of the things that I hear from my Tea Party friends who are in favor of figuring out how to completely divide us, I want to talk about the things that we agree on, because I do believe as a nation we agree on more than we disagree about. I think we all want the same things.
I think that's true. I really do think that's true, Rick. And I think a lot of what, for those of us who are from the labor movement, who will be joining One Nation, I think one of the things that we really want to see happen is we want this rally to really evoke a change where we are establishing the status of working people as the litmus test for success and failure of our economy and our recovery. That right now we're still very focused on corporate interests and how they're faring in this economy. And that just simply isn't enough. We know that working people, through their purchasing power, through their productivity, through their ability to protect their safety and to make ends meet, that is what will fuel the economy. And so this march for us is really about standing up to make sure that the jobs that we create are not only, you know, jobs, but good jobs, jobs that can support a family, jobs that mean that you are fairly compensated, that you have good benefits, that you're able to go to the doctor when you need to. All of those things are the floor. We should be setting a higher floor for what every worker in America deserves to have.
I absolutely agree. And as I was saying, you know, I think most people agree with that. And I think we need to focus on that stuff instead of allowing ourselves to be divided. And one of the things I've always said on this program is the very wealthy in this country, the people who are doing very well, the corporate CEOs who are getting the bonuses again, the Forbes 400 who, you know, back, you know, the wealth is back there, the people on the birth lottery list, they're happy. It's the rest of us who are at each other's throats, and they've done a masterful job of slicing and dicing us, your union members, your non-union members, your white collar, your blue collar, your black, your white. Nice job of slicing and dicing so that we don't really come together. And the key to this march, in my opinion, is getting past all that and saying, look, we need to talk about how we're going to move forward and create an economy that creates jobs that, as you said, provide for a decent living, a standard of living.
That's right. And what we know to be true is we are fighting for something. And we're not just blaming, pointing our finger to blame what hasn't happened. We are really trying to build a win-win economy where both employers and employees work together to generate success and share in the rewards. We know that American workers are the most productive workers in the world. And yet we have a corporate takeover economy because unscrupulous employers value profits over people. And we need to close that gap. And the gap should be closed by workers organizing into unions, by people having an opportunity to really bargain with their employers for fair compensation, for safe working conditions, that those are the ways that we'll get our nation back on track.
I agree. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Kimberly Freeman Brown, Executive Director of American Rights at Work. You know, you brought up an interesting point there. I'm seeing so many places around the country. What's popped into my head is the Mott's strike that just happened, and here locally, the Express Scripts situation that's going on, where we're seeing very profitable companies who have seen an opportunity to really kind of tighten the screws to their employees, taking back years of hard-fought wages and benefits. I think this is an opportunity to tell people, look, now is the time where you need to organize to protect yourself from these type of things.
I think that that's true. You know, if I was if I was a financial planner, I'd tell you to get a 401k or a Roth IRA. And if you're a working person that really wants to be able to make ends meet, the best thing that I think that you could do for yourself and your family is to form a union or join one.
Absolutely. Again, the march on October 2nd, 2010 is One Nation Working Together. OneNationWorkingTogether.org is the website. Kimberly Freeman Brown, Executive Director of American Rights at Work. Before you go, can you tell me a little bit about what the work you do at American Rights at Work?
Sure. At American Rights at Work, we're a national labor policy advocacy organization based here in Washington that is dedicated to protecting and advancing organizing and bargaining rights.
All righty. And you have a website?
Our website is www.AmericanRightsAtWork, all spelled out, .org.
All righty. We'll put a link to that on our site, TheRickSmithShow.com. Last word, what do you tell people? Give them something to encourage them, to get them fired up, to come out to this One Nation Working Together rally.
This is the next step. This is the step to really stand with working people so that we can demand the change that we voted for in 2008.
All righty. Kimberly Freeman Brown, I appreciate your time. Executive Director, American Rights at Work. You have a great day, and I look forward to seeing you at the march.
Same here, Rick.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. Stick around.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike. Like our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right. And you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Yeah. Sometimes we know the enemy, and the enemy I'm afraid is us sometimes. We seem to get in our own way. Just when we've got an opportunity to make our lives better, just when we have an opportunity to make our futures better, we allow the powers to be to separate us and divide us and take our eye off the ball. They're forever dropping the shiny thing in front of us, which is why I think this march that they're doing on October 2nd is a good idea. I think it's there's an opportunity to bring a bunch of people together and take some of that momentum back.
By the way, if anybody, any of our listeners are interested in watching on TV, it'll be on TV from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard on Dish Network. It'll be on channel 9415. That's channel 9415. Those of you who have DirecTV, it'll be on DirecTV channel 348. That's 348.
So, I don't want you watching it on TV. Don't watch it on TV. Get your butt down there. No TV. Just get there. Let me ask you this. What is it about Republicans, especially our Tea Party types, that cannot seem to understand the basic concept that you cannot use campaign money to pay your rent? You can't use campaign money to go out to eat. You can't use the party's money to rent hookers. You can't use the party money for strip clubs. You got to use it for campaigning. You look at this latest one, the guy running for Senate in, I think it's Senate there in Florida, Marco Rubio. You know, there are allegations now that he misused the party credit card, put the floor in his house using the party credit card. And you got to go, you know, duh. You got Christine O'Donnell, who I think is going to go to jail over this. I think her offenses were so bad. I think she was so blatant with it that they have to go after her. They absolutely have to. Anyway, you remember last night when I talked about the floodgates opening and we were going to see the sweeping of another hypocrite away? Well, the fourth allegation has emerged of sexual impropriety with the good Bishop Eddie Long of the New Birth Missionary Baptist Church. The website Black Spin reported on Friday this afternoon that the bishop plans to step down as pastor of the New Birth Missionary Baptist Church after he delivers his sermon on Sunday. According to the same story, as many as 30 young men are now being considered. They're now thinking about suing this guy. About 30. Now remember, folks, this is the same guy who told his congregation that gays deserve death during one of his sermons in 1990. A 2007 report by the Southern Poverty Law Center described Bishop Long as, quote, one of the most virulent homophobic black leaders in the religious-based anti-gay movement. The report quotes a long sermon in which he targets lesbian behavior. He said, quote, it is the most unattractive thing I've ever seen. Well, what are you doing watching? If you're that, you know, if you're that homophobic, what are you watching it for? Anyway, he says the most unattractive thing I've ever seen. When I see women wearing uniforms that men would wear and women fighting to get into the military, he shouted at his congregation. The women get perverted to turn toward women. And everybody knows it's dangerous to enter and exit. Everybody knows, lady, if you go to the store and you buy these devices, you know, those marital aids, those little rubber thingies, it's Memorex. It ain't real. Does anyone find it funny or ironic? The quote, it's dangerous to enter and exit. Maybe it's just me. But he says, God says you deserve death. And I think of this guy. And I remember my own story. The athletic director of the high school that I went to was one of these guys who his office, he was the athletic director, his office was in the boys' locker room. And he would stand in his doorway with his arms folded, watching everybody going in and out of the showers. Now, he wasn't the gym teacher. He was just a pervert who liked to stand and watch boys walk in and out of the showers. And my mother, who had gone to the same high school years earlier, had warned me about this guy who I had never met. Years before I ever met the guy. And when she passed away, I went to the same high school. And there he was. And it took one person to step forward. And as soon as that one person stepped forward, the floodgates opened, and everything that people had known for years came out in the newspapers. He was charged with, I think he was officially charged with like 18 counts, but there were like 250 people who had come forward over the years. And I'm telling you, that's this guy right here. He took advantage of people's belief. He took advantage of people who trusted him. And this isn't just a sexual thing. This is a power thing. This guy needs to be locked away for a very long time. And the reason I bring it up is that these are the voices that are saying, oh, no, we can't accept gays in the military. We can't have gay marriage. And we can't have these things because it'll destroy society. Well, what do you think you just did? What do you think you just did to this country? What do you think you did to those four people who have officially charged you, and as many as they're saying 30 now, who may come forward? And he'll give a whole weepy apology about how he sinned, and but he won't admit anything because you know he doesn't want to go to jail. He's not stupid, you know, kind of like the David Vitter thing. Oh, you know, I was sinned and I hurt my family and all. Kind of makes you wonder. Which is why when people come out and they tell me how religious they are or how in favor of something they are or how, you know, and they're without doubt and they're I question them. You get someone like this, like Pastor Ted Haggard. Remember him? Remember the good pastor? You know, out there fighting for legislation to make homosexuality a crime, and there he is sniffing crack off the backside of a male hooker. Kind of makes you wonder about their frame of mind. And maybe, just maybe, if they were able to be who they are, they'd be decent people. And I think I would tell, the only advice I would give Bishop Long before I drop this, is I wouldn't admit anything. Because you're good Christian people, the ones that just think you'd think the world of you or thought the world of you yesterday, they will never talk to you again. And all you got to do is look at Pastor Ted. Because they just did an HBO special with him. His congregation was one of the biggest in the country. They turned their back on him faster than, like he had the plague. And just left him out there to dangle. Good Christian values.
But on the other hand, I mean, monumental hypocrite. Would you want him as your pastor? I think not.
Look, I want
somebody. There's such a thing as forgiveness. I understand that. But I'm not so sure. Even after he was forgiven. And according to the Christian religion, God does forgive you your sins. But do you want a man like that to lead your congregation? I think not.
No, but here's the thing. I wouldn't have gone to a church like that in the first place. Because any time you have a pastor, a person of God, and I don't want to get into a whole religious rant here, but anytime you have someone who says that they, you know, they're the tongue of the word, and that word is hatred, that word is divisiveness, and that word is division. That's a church I wouldn't go to in the first place. I would have walked in one door and said, oh, I'm wrong place here, and I'd have walked right out. Now, I want a religious person who talks tolerance, as Jesus did, who talks helping the poor, helping the sick. You know, none of this hooray for me, prosperity gospel. Jesus wants you to be rich. Jesus wants you to put money in your pocket. Jesus wants you to have the big house on the hill so you can look down on those poor people and you can feel for them and know that they'll have pie in the sky. I mean, come on. Is that what we really want?
But, Reverend Ted, what I don't understand about the conservatives, you know, the Bible teaches that you're supposed to be you're supposed to forgive people their sins. But yet, when it comes to homosexuality, people don't forgive. They don't. If they find out you're gay, some people just actually hate you and loathe you. And yet, according to the Bible, that's between him and God. They don't have a right to judge. But yet, I guess it's a society, the way you were brought up. It's a societal reaction. There's something especially loathsome about a gay person.
I don't know. As a kid, we used to make fun of you. You did the dumb things that kids do. And look, you called each other names and you put each other down. And maybe there was somebody who was a little effeminate that you could do. But that's what kids do.
And you call them the F word. You're right about kids.
And then you grow up.
Right.
And then you grow up and you go, you know what? What does it matter? It's not costing me anything. The only way I would be upset is if, I were in a shower and I bent over to pick up the soap and someone came up behind me. That's the only time I would care. I've had instances and something recently, a guy came up and, was he hitting on me? I don't know. He came up and he asked me if I was single. Nice guy. I said, no, I'm married. Thank you. He said, thank you very much. And he went away. And my wife, she had a nice joke of it. Got to rib me a little bit that,
Was she with you?
She was standing right there. but, hey, I didn't get offended by it. To be honest, I'm kind of flattered that somebody would actually think enough of me to say, hey, I'd be interested in you. Not that I'd go that way, but the fact that another human being finds you interesting, I think, is a positive thing. Now, not my cup of tea, but hey. Well, that's how it is. I wouldn't be stupid. I'm going to beat him up. Tucker Carlson said, I went back and got a friend, and we pushed his head into the wall. And you would expect that from a conservative. Have to go get back.
Mr. Bowtie.
Couldn't do it himself. He's got to go get somebody to do it with him.
Tucker.
But, look, at the end of this, if you're against gay marriage, don't get married. If a guy walks up to you and says, I want to marry you, you say, no, I appreciate it, though, but I'm not into it. That's simple. What does it matter to you? The only people that I really get ticked off at are the people who steal from me. The banks, the credit card companies. Those are the people I hate. What people do in the confines of their home, like this pastor, this bishop or whatever he is, I could care less what he's doing with adults. The fact that he went with teenage kids and he used his position as influence, to me, they should lock him up. Yes. And he should get FCC kind of stuff. But he should get what he gets. And if he's into that, prison's a good place for him.
And I understand in prison, people like that are targeted. That's not the best place to be. If you preyed on children, if you're a child predator, you're in trouble in prison, I can tell you that.
Well, he better.
There is justice. Right?
Well, there is justice, and he better protect those pearly whites, because the first thing they do with people like that in prison is they knock out your front chiclets.
Okay.
Yep. So you can't close your mouth.
Okay.
There you go. Anyway, let's take a quick break. I think I went a little too far with that, but that's just how it is. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
John Boehner is known for his ties and his tan. You've probably never heard of this Ohio Republican who's been the minority leader for 4 years, but he has big plans to be the next Speaker of the U.S. House. Who is he? For clues, look no further than those ties and that tan. The tan is odd, both because it has an eerie orange hue to it and because it never goes away. Even in the dead of winter, this GOP leader from sun-starved Ohio has such a perpetual glow that he's been nicknamed Suntan Johnny. How does he get the glow? by routinely flying on corporate jets to play golf with corporate lobbyists on various corporate tabs at such sun-drenched resorts as the Ritz-Carlton in Naples, Florida. Which brings us to his ties, by which I don't mean the flashy silk neckwear he favors. Rather, I mean Boehner's flagrant ties to a clique of powerful influence peddlers. These ties go way back. In 1996, he was caught passing checks from tobacco lobbyists to fellow Republicans on the House floor. His inner circle of special interests is so cozy that it's even been given its own nickname, Boehnerland. Outsiders need not apply, for Boehnerland is an exclusive place inhabited by about 20 lobbyists for such outfits as Citigroup, R.J. Reynolds, Coors, Goldman Sachs, Google, and UPS. They put millions of campaign dollars into his pockets, fly him around, wine and dine him at the finest restaurants, and sustain his political ambitions. In turn, Boehner is their boy. One member of Suntan Johnny's corrupt club candidly told the New York Times that he regularly gets Boehner's help for his clients, ranging from fighting limits on debit card fees to protecting tax breaks for hedge fund operators. This is Jim Hightower saying they want Boehner to become speaker for one reason. He's fluent in corporate speak.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got it!
I had a conversation with one of our friends over at the station, one of our stations, and I said, so have you been getting many irate listeners? He goes, no, listeners have been fine. After last night with our race relations discussion and tonight after the whole hypocritic pastor thing, I think the complaint box will fill up because kind of makes you wonder. But hey, you know, this is the thing. The reality is this is why we have this program. And like I said last night, interviewing Mark Warren about his book Fire in the Heart, How White Activists Embrace Racial Justice, race relations is uncomfortable. Talking about blacks and whites is uncomfortable to me. And it was one of the most uncomfortable interviews I have ever had. Because, you know, it's hard to talk about your own prejudices. It's hard to talk about how the races are. And it was tough for me. So now what we're going to do is we're going to get away from that. And we're going to go back to stuff that I think is that's a bad way of putting that. But something that I'm more interested in, which is manufacturing. We need to bring jobs back to the country. And I understand there was a subcommittee here.
Yes. Yesterday there was a House subcommittee meeting. And several experts called for an immediate rethinking of our national economic policies so as to regain our global lead in manufacturing before it's too late. Michael Wassell, a member of the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission, told the panel the situation is so bad that we no longer have the domestic capacity to produce enough ammunition to supply our troops and law enforcement. Let me say that again. The panel was told that the situation is so bad that we no longer have the domestic capacity to produce enough ammunition to supply our troops and law enforcement.
Well, you know why that is? Because Obama's taking them all away. Obama's taking the bullets away. At first he was going to raise the price 500%, but then the gun people were on to that. So now we're just not going to make them anymore. That's Obama's plan.
Well,
we're not going to manufacture bullets anymore. That's the plan.
Police departments are actually on a waiting list. Jeff Flax.
So we're going to have people walking along. We're going to have cops walking along like Barney Five with his bullet in his pocket?
Mm-hmm. kind of.
Oh, but it's actually
worse than
that. We are so screwed in this country.
Jeff Fox, who's a distinguished fellow at the Economic Policy Institute, said the U.S. government must craft an industrial policy to rebuild our manufacturing. Its key elements should include taking away incentives for companies to move jobs overseas, reducing the huge U.S. trade deficit, and pushing harder to force China to end its currency manipulation and using government procurement to encourage domestic production. The sad part about this, the free trade, and the devastation it's brought to this country, some estimates say 11 million. Some people think it's more than that, 11 million good-paying, family-sustained jobs. And what do we hear from the Republicans, Rick? I haven't heard one Republican either in the halls of Congress or publicly stand up and articulate a policy to rebuild our industrial manufacturing base. What's their answer? More the same. They want a free trade agreement with Korea. They want a free trade agreement with Colombia. They want a free trade agreement with Panama. It's the same old tarred policies that have been an abject failure. And that's very disturbing. You would think the Republicans at least would have a policy.
Well,
I mean, tell us what it is. I don't know. Do you know what the Republican policy is in rebuilding the industrial base? I haven't heard any.
Tax cuts.
Tax cuts aren't going to do it.
I read the pledge. There's nothing about trade in the pledge. They're very happy with trade the way it is. They're very happy with it because there's nothing in the pledge. The pledge is the way back. We have the pledge. And the pledge has nothing about trade. I think we need to rewrite the pledge.
If you read, we don't have the time, but we could have got into this in more depth. But some of the testimony says that because of the advanced technology, we're to the point now where, you know, some of these components we don't manufacture in the United States. It's getting very, very critical. I know we've talked about it for years. At least now they're having hearings. At least they're making an effort to start to rebuild. You got to go past the stage of just talking. But at least we're having hearings. In the Bush administration, we didn't even have any hearings on this. It's long, long overdue. I just hope it's not too late.
Well, here's the thing, and this is what bothers me. Come November, all this stops. Come November, all of these hearings, all of this stuff stops because the Republicans I keep hearing they're going to take over the House. If they take over the House, all these hearings end. And then it's just happy times. China's going to, mark my words, mark this on the calendar, because I'm telling you right now, this time next year, you're going to read a headline that says China is the largest value-added manufacturer in the world. You are going to read that. Because they're almost there right now. We held that title as the number one value-added manufacturer in the world, which means we take raw material and we produce a product with it. We take that piece of wood, like we cut down the tree somewhere up in the hinterlands, Oregon or Washington or wherever, West Virginia or here in Pennsylvania, we chop that tree down, we drive it down into North Carolina where they used to turn it into furniture. And then they would bring it back to the store and we would have a value-added product. What we're doing right now is we're chopping down those trees, we're putting them onto a big boat, and they're being shipped across the ocean to China. China is now ripping those trees into boards, adding value to them, selling them to the companies that make furniture. The furniture is made, adding value to that lumber, and we are buying the product. If you really stop and think about the definition of a third world country, the definition is you send out raw materials and you import finished products. See, we used to have both. We used to have the raw materials that we then turned into products that we used to buy. It was a very nice, cozy situation where workers could make a decent living and owners could make a decent living and people could get decent products. And as a nation, we could ensure that they weren't painted with lead paint and they didn't have, antifreeze in the toothpaste and all of the things that we're seeing. And that the Pyrex dishes that we buy don't explode when mom takes that hot apple pie out of the oven. Oh, boy, what a wonderful. That's a Norman Rockwell picture, isn't it? Mom running around the kitchen scalding from hot apple pie. I think that's a great Norman. We had to dig Norman up and have him paint that.
I can smell that apple pie.
Yeah, I can hear the shrieking of her voice. Because come to think about it, I remember when I was a kid, my grandmother put one of these big, she used to make this cherry, like cherry filling cake kind of thing. It was on a cookie sheet. It was about an inch thick, had cherry filling. I sat in it once right after she took it out of the oven. You want to talk about a hot seat? Wow.
You weren't all that bright as a kid, were you?
I was asleep.
Oh, were you really?
I was asleep. I came out. She called me to answer the phone, and I always sat in this one chair to talk on the phone. I sat where, right, man, and I got to tell you, I woke up in an awful hurry. And my behind was red with more than just cherry pie filling. And that's why, to this day, and that was 30-some years ago. That was 30 years ago. To this day, I look before I sit down. Lesson learned.
That's good to know.
Go ahead.
To give you an idea of what we were talking about, since we have some time here, we talked about our ability to defend ourselves. Quickly go over the areas where we don't have enough in this country, and we've allowed them to leave the country. I'm talking semiconductors, talking printed circuit boards, machine tools, advanced materials, aerospace. They were even going to close Avondale, the Avondale shipyards down in Louisiana, until Congress came in, the U.S. Senator, the Obama administration put pressure on the military. They were going to close that down. And if they would have closed that down, they would have put our ability to produce ships in our own country at risk. I mean, we are very close to not being able to produce the very weapons that we need to defend this country.
I agree. And, you know, the reality in this is we better come up with a plan. And this is one of the very few things that I agree with Glenn Beck on. You absolutely have to have a plan. And for too long in this country, we've been guided by this theory that there was an invisible man with an invisible hand who was, you know, moving things around that we couldn't see. I would like to have a little more set policy than just hoping and praying that the invisible man is there. Maybe having some policy that says, you know, if we're going to build roads and bridges, maybe we should build this, make the steel and the concrete here at home. Smart stuff. Makes a lot of sense to me. And if you were going to purchase products here in the U.S., you should have an option of buying products that were made here in the U.S. And we should have tariffs that take wages and environmental degradation out of the equation. If you want to pollute, okay. Which is why I think a lot of people were in favor of the cap and trade. That they thought this would be a penalty for people who were polluting and destroying the environment through production. I'm not in favor of the current cap and trade. I don't think we need to set up a billionaire market. I do think we need to punish polluters. Now, if you read the grand pledge, evidently they don't.
I know you weren't big on cap and trade. I mean, we talked about it on the air and off the air.
Well, why should we create a market, a billionaire market, when we already have the ability to regulate this stuff? We've already got the ability to say, if you're going to build a product here, you've got to abide by certain rules. And you can turn that into your trade policy as well, saying, look, we're not going to allow you to bring products in that violate our production standards. It makes sense.
What you're saying is tightening of the rules for polluters.
Absolutely.
What you're saying.
And we have the ability to do that. We don't need a billionaire market to do it. And then they want to basically give the credits away.
Well, the same people who are fighting cap and trade, the same people who won't allow you to tighten the regs, unfortunately. You know it, and I know it, and you know which party that is. Although there are some Democrats that also oppose it, so I don't know if it's totally fair to blame it all on the Republicans, but certainly most of the Republican Party, if not all of it, will oppose it.
I blame it on politicians in general, especially, you know, the ones that, you know, they're all over the map. Whichever way the campaign money goes, that's where they go.
Look at what they're doing with his taxes. I mean, Democrats that are not willing to go along with ending the Bush tax cuts, are they really Democrats?
Well, here's the thing. Blanche Lincoln comes from a conservative area.
Well, I don't consider her.
It's these conservatives who are...
She's a Democrat in name only.
These are these conservatives who are screwing things up. The people who don't have a grasp of common sense. I think the vast majority of the people understand, look, it's tough times right now. The majority of people need tax cuts. They need more money in their pockets so they can go out and spend. So we can create jobs, maybe a job that's going to put you back to work. I'm sorry, Mr. Rich Guy, your shoulders are pretty big. You can carry a little bit more water. You should be expected. From those, much is given, much is expected. Now is the time for you to throw in. The country needs you. It's your patriotic duty. And that said, this bill, in my opinion, should be very simple. We're cutting taxes for 97% of the people. I'm sorry if you make over $250,000 a year. I'm sorry. You're going to need a little bit more. And maybe we can index it for different areas. If you work in New York City, maybe $750,000. And if you live in, you know, Patuca, wherever, maybe $250,000 is fine. Because, you know, there are some areas where $250,000 is, you know, the janitor makes that. Because the cost of living is
high. Tell me where the janitor
makes $250,000. Well, New York City, they got janitors, they show them all the time. This guy made $150,000 one year because they work a ton of overtime. You got to take that into account.
In context.
I absolutely think you have to. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're right back to wrap this up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Hello, I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing, so is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
On June 25, 1938, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law. Viewed as one of the final pieces of legislation of FDR's New Deal and the single most worker-friendly piece of legislation ever written, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was a victory not only for labor unions, but for workers, families, and children across the country. FDR called the new law the most far-reaching, far-sighted program for the benefit of workers ever adopted in this or any other country. This visionary piece of legislation put a ceiling over hours and a floor under wages, mandating a 44-hour work week, a 25-cent minimum wage, and time and a half for overtime. The Fair Labor Standards Act was later amended to 40 hours per week and 40 cents per hour. The law also excluded children from working dangerous jobs and set standard conditions for the employment of child workers to avoid continued exploitation of children. The Fair Labor Standards Act has been changed or amended at least 43 different times. These alterations have been used both to expand worker protections, such as raising the minimum wage, prohibiting age discrimination, and requiring equal pay, and to restrict and take away protections such as the Taft-Hartley Act and the 2004 Fair Pay Amendment. Today, we take the 40-hour work week, minimum wages, overtime, and child labor protections for granted. But up until the passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, workers were at the mercy of their employers, and children were dying in industrial accidents. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Our friends over at PA2010.com, we haven't had them on in a while. We should get them back on here. They run a great website, PA2010.com, right down the middle. It's got every idea that every perspective you could imagine. Right, left, center, insane, even crazier than that. It's all right there. for you to take a look at. But they write in a recent healthcare policy paper, Tom Corbett called the newly enacted federal healthcare law, quote, a great opportunity to extend coverage to thousands more people throughout Pennsylvania. But as State Attorney General Tom Corbett also joined a lawsuit seeking to block the legislation from going into effect. And in a fundraising letter, PA2010.com reports, Tom Corbett told supporters that, quote, under no circumstances will I go along with this unconstitutional, big government, special interest takeover of health care. Do I see hypocrisy? On one hand, he's saying it's a great opportunity to extend coverage to thousands more people throughout Pennsylvania. Even he admits this is a good thing, giving us the ability to cover more people. And you look at the fact, the report, the census numbers that just came out, almost 51 million people, no health care at all. What does that mean for the rest of us who have health care? Well, it means higher rates. And those, what do those higher rates mean? Even higher rates, because our employers are shifting the burden onto our backs. And eventually we're going to see a collapse of this system as well, which is why this bill was so important. And I got a press release from the Pennsylvania Doctors for America group. They write, members released a letter expressing outrage at Attorney General Corbett joining a 20 state lawsuit to block implementation of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. More than 60 physicians and medical students in Pennsylvania signed a letter stating that the lawsuit will harm their patients by denying Medicaid funding and slowing the implementation of the bill. And look, you know, these doctors know. Doctors for America is a national movement of 15,000 physicians. And what's interesting is I think doctors just want to be doctors. They want to do their jobs. And I'm hoping that at some point this bill lets them do that.
Well, they see the worst part of our system. I mean, you talk to some doctors, they'll tell you, you know, the worst part is dealing with the insurance companies. I mean, they actually have to many times go, they're the only ones that can prevent these insurance companies from screwing their patients. If I can comment on Corbett's position, I mean, you and I both know that there's established law. And it's not just one, it's numerous established law, which says that the government, under certain circumstances, has a right to mandate. And correct me if I'm wrong, Rick, I think their basic position is we're taking it to court because we don't think the government has the right to mandate. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes.
I guess, well, it's let's be honest. I mean, we all know this is politically motivated. I mean, it's designed to throw a little cookie to the political right.
Well, it is politically motivated, but you know, in their defense, and very little defense, there's a libertarian part of me that doesn't like being told that I have to purchase health insurance. But the reality is we cannot have a system in this country any longer with free riders.
But on the other hand, Rick, you and I both advocate single payer. At some level, money would come out of our pocket, whether it's from the general fund that we pay in regular taxes or whether we would decide that you pay X number of dollars per month. That would be mandated. Yeah. Or am I wrong on that?
Well, you're absolutely right. And what I'm saying to you is that while I may have some libertarian streaks that say I don't want the government telling me that I have to buy it, there's the pragmatic part of me that says, you know what, there are some times where that has to happen because you can't have a system with free riders. You can't have people, you cannot have people who are taking a benefit and not paying for it. You know, again, you know, you look at some of these people who want good wages and want the benefits that unions provide, but they don't want to pay union dues. You can't have free riders. You got to have people paying for the negotiations for the contract, just like you've got to have people paying for health care.
And again, we've talked about this so many times, this is old hat. I mean, we have to come to the realization that if we cover every American long term, it's not only the right moral thing to do, but economically, it's going to help our country.
And what you do is you change the way health care is delivered. And that's the other part that we're not really confront it. You know, most illnesses should be confronted in your local family practitioner's office. You know, we need to go back to the days where, you know, it'll never happen, but that you have doctors who, you know, with their little bag who travel around and go to your house.
Well,
but you need to have. I've been fortunate in my life, and let me just explain this. I've been very fortunate to have a union job all of my working career. I have been very fortunate, and with that union job has come health care. So I have had the ability to have some very, very good family doctors. And the one I have here, I have an excellent relationship with. He knows my history. He knows my family. When we see them in the community, hey, how you doing? Hey, how you feeling? There's a relationship there. Now, we're not best of buds. We don't go golfing and drinking together. But he knows our family. He knows our history. And that's what every person should have with their doctor, a relationship where it is their job to make sure that they keep track of everything that happens so that they can prevent stuff. You know, I go get a blood test every year. He's got blood tests on me for the last several years. So you can see what's changed. And you can see that if, hey, whoa, this one level's a little bit high, let's go get another test. Make sure that that's not something really serious. Like my wife just went for her annual woman appointment. You know, she's got a person, an OB that she goes to and, you know, has been going through for a couple of years. Hey, you know, what's this? You know, I got this little thing on my shoulder, doctor. Yeah, okay, we'll go get that looked at. You prevent stuff. That's what we should be talking about.
And those who were advocates of health care reform, again, I don't think they did a good enough job getting that message out. We need to change the preventive health care system. We allowed the other side to frame the discussion.
And the reality is all the money is in reaction. All the money is wait until you get sick. So, oh, okay, well, now you're desperate. And understand this, because desperation is a conservative model. They need people to be desperate, because only desperate people would vote for them. They need you to be hungry. They need you to be in the streets. They need you to be at their will. Just like with healthcare, they need that desperation. And who did they scare the most? They scared the old people. The people who are looking at, you know, I got a whole bunch of medical problems, and oh, they're going to take my health care. No, the Democrats were never going to take Granny's health care. I would have been out there fighting because my grandmother's one of the people who benefited the most from Medicare. And if it weren't for Medicare, she'd be dead today. And that's the story, again, that the Democrats just did not get out in front of. And they allowed the Republicans to scare Granny. They allowed the Republicans to scare people. And the thing that bothers me is that we've got a bunch of people in this country who are too easily scared. You know, where is the greatest generation? If you want, you love to talk about the greatest generation. Where is this greatest generation? Where's this generation of people who are going to stand up and fight back and say, hell no, we're not going to take nonsense. We're not going to take second chair. And I'm telling you, we can be that generation. Right now, at this time in history, we have the ability to say, you know what, we're not afraid. We're not going to buy into the scare tactics. We're not going to turn back. We're not going to hand the mantle back to the people who created the mess that we're in. We're just not going to do it. And I'm telling you, don't be afraid. You know, we have the ability. We have the ability to turn this country around and make it better than it was before Bush just drove us into the ditch. And we can change the inequity. We can change that. You know how? Change our labor laws. Allow people to join and form unions collectively. Not because I'm some big socialist and I want people to all come together and be collective. No. Because I want you to be selfish. I want you to say, you know what? All I care about is me. I want higher wages to feed my kids. I want health care to take care of them. And I want a pension plan to take care of myself. That's what we should be fighting for. You have a great weekend. We will see you back here on Monday, as we do every weekday night at 9 to midnight right here. Again, check out TheRickSmithShow.com for any information. You can check out our weekend programs as well. If you missed the program, it'll be right there. Remember, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Have a great weekend.
been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's color like the tide flood beneath the blood sway in fear.